Powered from the Perdomo Studios Black Stage in Indian Trail, North Carolina, and broadcasting from California, it's episode 147 of the Primetime Show. Tonight, Ed Lehman of General Cigar Company makes his primetime debut. We'll talk Hoyo de Monterey, Punch Cigars, Excalibur, and bourbon, plus a whole lot more. And as always, the Primetime Show is sponsored by Delos Reyes Cigars. Delos Reyes Cigars introduces another chapter of the saga Celez. Celez is a Spanish word that means leisure after work in the spirit of the standing ideal of owning your own journey and making your own saga. Saga Celez is the perfect companion to enrich those moments of choice, making them truly yours. Saga Celez carries a blend of Criollo Olor and Piloto Cubano wrapped in a selected Ecuador Shade Claro wrapper that generously delivers with elegance a surprisingly rich and balanced smoke. It's available in three sizes at an affordable price. Be sure to ask your retailer for Saga Celez. And by Perdomo Cigars, awarded Nicaraguan Cigar of the Year in 2014 by Cigar Journal, the Perdomo 20th Anniversary brand has consistently earned the highest scores in the industry and is a top seller in humidors around the world. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary blend requires tobaccos that have been carefully hand-selected and are well-aged for a minimum of 8 years. The Perdomo 20th Anniversary is offered in three distinct wrappers, a smooth, creamy Ecuadorian Connecticut, a rich, earthy Cuban seed Nicaraguan Sungrown, and a dark, oily Cuban seed Nicaraguan Maduro. Combining these beautifully bourbon barrel-aged wrappers with thick high-priming binder and filler tobaccos gives each blend a balanced complexity with layers of rich flavors and smooth, elegant aromas. Perdomo Cigars is a family-owned and operated company headquartered in Miami, Florida, with manufacturing and agricultural facilities in Esteli, Nicaragua. Perdomo's highly acclaimed cigar brands include the Perdomo Estate Selection Vintage, the Perdomo Double Age 12-Year Vintage, Perdomo 20th Anniversary, Perdomo Reserve 10th Anniversary Champagne, Perdomo Habano Bourbon Barrel Age, Perdomo Lot 23, and many more. For great tasting notes and pairing information, check out the new Perdomo website at www.perdomocigars.com. And by Miami Cigar and Company. Nessa Miranda said it best. There is a mystery and depth to Africa that captivates my spirit, always drawing me to come back. This cigar, Don Lino Africa, captures the way going that makes me feel. Cigar making is an art form, but in that moment, when the cigar becomes art itself, you have something special. Don Lino Africa returns from Miami Cigar and Company. The blend you remember blended even more masterfully this time in partnership with Tabacalera A.J. Fernandez. An exotic and complex blend meant to mesmerize. It's available in five box plus Rotolas. Don Lino Africa returns. Ask for it at your local retailer. And by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. It's available on iTunes and Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And as always, all the live streaming on the Primetime Network of shows is sponsored exclusively by Drew Estate. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Primetime, episode 147 for Thursday, July 16th, 2020. This is Will Cooper. I'm on the black stage here in the Perdomo Cigar Studios, joined cross-country by my friend and colleague, Mr. Aaron Loomis.
How you doing tonight, Will?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I was doing well. I heard you threw me under the bus on your show earlier tonight.
No, I didn't throw you under the bus on the show. So this is, apparently Sokka said I called his stuff, like I basically said he lacked creativity. Now, I didn't say you did. It was on one of those panel shows that someone said that. But I did not say it was you. I want to make that clear.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Some comments seem to think otherwise, but no, I'll take your word for it.
No, Abe immediately mentioned your name. I'll say that. But no, okay. I was co-hosting a virtual event with Sokka at Smoke Inn, and all of a sudden, Sokka brings this up, and I'm like, I don't think I said that, right? And according to Ronnie, he said, no, you didn't say it, but someone said it on one of the panel shows is what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Girl, I'm innocent. I'm going to just say that, but I did not throw – I don't know who said it, to be honest with you.
Right.
So I have to go back. Sokka's not even sure. He's like, oh, I mean, he didn't have – I said, you have the video or whatever? I'm like – whatever.
Yeah.
But no. Interesting week this week for me. I had to do some crazy hours, and last night I actually went to bed at like a normal hour this week, and feel kind of rested. I feel like I'm back on a regular sleep schedule, which was like a little difficult this week, I could tell you that.
No, that's good.
That's good. So yeah, no, we're looking forward to a great show tonight. Without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Aaron. He is from General Cigar Company. He's making his debut on the Primetime Show. If you haven't heard of this gentleman before, you're going to know a lot about him tonight because he's behind some of the most iconic brands out there. He's Mr. Ed Lehman of General Cigar Company. Ed, welcome to Primetime.
Yeah, thanks, Will. It's really a pleasure to be here, man. Like, you know, you grew up in this industry, and this is the end result, being on some of these shows, and it's cool. You know, I like to hear myself talk. I'm a marketing guy, you know, and so it's thanks for having me, both of you guys.
Yeah, no, and, nope.
Yeah, no. Aaron, I did hear that Will was talking shit about you too.
Yeah. See, I got backup group.
No, but seriously, guys, thank you for having me. You know, it's I'm the guy that nobody knows about in the industry, so it's sort of nice to sort of get out here and say hi to everybody.
No, we appreciate it. You know, we've been making the rounds, I think, through General Cigar over the past couple of months. So actually, there were some names I gave Victoria who we wanted to get as we're going through here. We were supposed to have Rick tonight, but like I said, you and I know Steve's coming on in a couple of weeks as well, yeah. Steve Abbott. Yeah. I wanted to get some of you guys on as well because there's a lot of faces behind General and a lot of really good work happening, and you were highly recommended. I could say that as well. I think I was telling you beforehand. So,
well, good. That's always good to hear. Although I'm a gap filler. You know, like that's okay.
Not at all.
He's just putting his foot in his mouth all night tonight.
No. Here's right. What's gonna happen. No, you know what's gonna happen. What's gonna happen after the show, Aaron? Everyone's gonna be calling like to get Ed.
Ed, you're gonna be on a book tour after this.
Be on a book tour. Trust me. This has happened many times to us, right?
I gotta work on my autograph signature.
You know. So Ed, we always like to kind of start the show off, and we get a little get to know you a little first. And the first question we want to ask, we ask our first time guest is, tell us your first time you got involved with smoking cigars. Don't worry about getting the general yet, but what was your first experience with smoking cigars?
I guess the memories that stick out really. When I was a kid, you know, I stumbled on, you know, like an abandoned house, you know, you go in and lo and behold, there was a bunch of, you know, like a box of, you know, old White Owls and Phillies, right? So, you know, that's a memory that sticks in. But really, as far as premium cigars is concerned, you know, I didn't really get involved into the hobby until I really found out that I got hired at General, you know, and I immediately went into, I was working for a beer company at the time and a shop that sold the beer that I was delivering also had a humidor. And so since I had the job and I knew I was going to leave the beer industry, you know, like, I quickly, you know, went into the humidor and picked something out, you know, because this was my next path really. And it was if you guys remember, it was the CAO, Seed to Soul sort of, box. It had like, I don't know, 10 CAO cigars. This is before General Bottom, right? So it had about 10 CAO cigars and that DVD. I said, well, shit, man, like if I'm going to, you know, be in this category, you know, like this seems like it's up my alley. It's got an educational video. It's got a variety pack. So honestly, it was, you know, about 15 years ago, you know, that transition for me happened, you know, and, you know, this thing called cigar really sort of became, you know, the hobby that it is now for me, you know. So that's about, I mean, I would love to have, you know, that story of, you know, my non-existent Cuban relatives, you know, I smoke with them, you know, when I was seven and stuff, but I simply don't, you know, it's one of those things. I stumbled on cigars later in life, you know, and I couldn't have sort of found a better brand, you know, to sort of start with CAO because, as fate would have it, as you guys know, we acquired that company a while back. But that's about it, you know. And you know, it was just great, you know. If I don't know if it's the marketing person in me or just sort of the inventor guy that likes to toy around things, but you know, with those cigars, you know, although I spent the money on it, I'm like, all right, what is it? You know, let me cut it in half and let me see what's going on, right? So you know, like immediately it was one of those things, you know, like you have to smoke it, you have to dissect it, you have to look at the leaf, you have to, you know, like rub the filler tobacco in your hands, you've got to do everything, you know, it's you got to involve all of your senses. And so that was really the first time that you know, that's clearly sort of burned in my brain as far as, you know, when did the transition happen, you know?
you mentioned the Seed the Soul thing. That was with the DVD, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now I'm remembering that. Yeah, because it was kind of, I want to say it was about 14, 15 years ago for me as well, is when I started like getting hardcore into this. And that set was something that you just brought a memory back to at the time. Because we really hadn't seen anything like that before.
Right.
And it was like, for me, new, it was very educational, obviously, when you got that. And CAO just, at the time, I mean, CAO, to this day, it's still one of the most successful brands under General, but it was very, that was, you know, they were very successful back then as well.
It was a beautiful little pack, you know, and again, you know, I'm a sucker for you know, that DVDs like that. It's like, you know, an added bonus when you look at, you know, a box like that. So, you know, there was good production value in it, you know, and, you know, it was a quick digestible, you know, piece of information, you know, that sticks with you. And this is, you know, this is way before any, like, the internet bloomed and blossomed, you know, into what it is now, right? So, you know, you had to, you know, find the computer with the DVD drive, you know, or the CD drive and put it in. And, you know, it really became sort of, you know, a production, you know. So, it was cool.
Yep. And you mentioned you were working in the beer industry beforehand.
Mm.
So what were you doing? Was it like marketing and brand management back then as well?
No. It's funny, you know. So I'll just sort of get right into it, right? So, I moved up to Richmond, Virginia, from Greenville, South Carolina, in 2002 to do a master's program. I really loved advertising. That when I graduated from Clemson in 2000, that's what I wanted to do. I liked the creative side. And you know, if I could go back, you know, and you know, touch up some degrees, you know, I think some graphic design would be in there. And anybody that knows me, you know, I just, you know, I make things for them and I draw things, you know. And so of course, my skill level from that is non-existent. But, you know, so I knew that the creative industry is where I wanted to be. I got a marketing degree. You know, I loved advertising, sort of coming up with concepts and really champion, you know, ideas and bringing stuff to life. So I moved up to Richmond to go to what was called the Ad Center at the time, and it was a very unique sort of advertising master's program through Virginia Commonwealth, and I studied what was called account planning, which they've sort of moved away from that term, you know, in the advertising industry. They call them more of the creative brand managers now, you know, but it's one of those things. It was the conduit between the agency and the consumer, right? So the account planner would go and do all the research and become the consumer and really digest all these insights, you know, and then regurgitate them to the creative team, you know, in order for the work to be on point, you know. And I love that aspect of sort of being with the people in the trenches, you know, finding out what really motivates them, you know, in order to sort of translate to the creatives in order to sort of create good work. And so ironically, you know, I go through the 2-year program and I'm like, man, I don't know if I like agencies anymore, you know, because, you know, just thinking about it, you know, all the ideas, at least in my opinion, right? So all of the ideas really come from the client, and the client says, hey, agency, I want this. Now you go and do this. But ultimately the idea, you know, on what you want them to work on comes from the client. I'm like, oh, I really want to try to get into, you know, the client side of this, and let me be a good advertising person, marketing guy from a client perspective in order for me to tell the agency what to do, because I speak that language, you know. And so, but as a 24, 25, you know, kid coming out of this program, it was one of those things like, I just, the client side is a really tough nut to crack, you know? And so they're like, yeah, thanks, but no, you need a couple more years, more experience, blah, blah, blah. So I was like, you know what? I'm done. I was in Richmond. My roots were planted. You know, so I was like, you know what? I'm going to brew beer, you know, because I used to, you work for breweries in Greenville. I said, I'm just going to be a brewer. I actually really like that. That's a passion of mine. I love beer. It's a passion. I love the business of beer. So I'm going to be a brewer. So I went to one of the local microbreweries in town. And again, you know, I've got 60 grand worth of debt. And I'm like, you know, give me a $10 job. So I went to the brewery. I said, hey, I want to be a brewer. You guys got any, you know, openings, you know, like, of course, starting at the bottom of the ladder. You know, and they're like, yeah, we don't really have any openings in the brewery. But, go talk to Rick in the warehouse because I think they might need a driver. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, and so it was, I walked over, talked to Rick. He's like, you just graduated from, a master's program and you want to drive beer around town? Are you sure? You know, he goes, I only pay $11 an hour. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, man. You know, like it's fine. You know, like this is, you know, if this helps me become a brewer at some point in time, let's go for it. And it was actually a really cool job, man. I mean, it was really, really fun. You get to, there's a lot of similarities with craft beer, especially now in the cigar consumer and the cigar customer, you know, so there's a lot of shared insights and a lot of shared, you know, momentum that both of these industries have, especially now, you know, but, you know, don't get me wrong. I was also driving a beer truck around town, you know, dropping off all these really fine crafted, you know, beers from a lot of imported stuff, a lot of stuff from Pennsylvania, North Carolina. But I also would carry, if I did happen to have an interview, I would sort of carry a suit in the driver's side. So I'd just run into one of the restaurants at a bar that I was at, you know, drop the beer off. I'm like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, I got an interview across the street. That's sort of the genesis of you know, sort of what was going on and how I got into the business. And it took me a long time. It really did. You know, I guess I'll just sort of pour out the life story, but I did, in between my first and second year, I did work at a little promotional agency, and I worked with a guy named Brad, and Brad actually moved to New York City when General was still in Park Avenue, and became their sort of in-house creative director, along with another friend of mine from school named Paul, as a copywriter. And so he called me one day. He goes, Ed, you're never going to believe this, but they just got bought. They're moving back down to Richmond. I said, really? I said, are you coming? Because I like Brad. Brad, are you coming back? He goes, no, man, I hate Richmond. I'm staying here. But General's coming down. I said, okay. I said, give me all of your contact information, like all the people that I should talk to. Because I don't, even then, like, I didn't smoke a cigar until basically I was hired, right? So there is a big gap here, and I'll tell you about that. And so he gave me a couple of people's information, and I tell you, I kid you not, for almost 2 years, so from 2004 to 2006, I pestered the New York crew almost weekly with resumes, portfolios. I made shit out of cigar boxes. I would send it to them. Brad's like, Ed, you got to stop, man. Like, you got to, like they get it. They know you're around, you know, but they just weren't ready to move down yet, right? So finally, after I swear to God, after a year and 8 months, they finally moved down to Richmond, got settled in Richmond, and for me, I sent a last ditch email. I'm like, I was defeated. I was like, listen, I don't know what else you guys want from me. You know, like, this is almost 2 years. This is the last email that I'm gonna write. You know, like, can I please have a job? Can I please have an interview? Like, at least let me talk to somebody. And since they moved down, they were established, they got back to me pretty quick. They're like, okay, man, like, we're ready for you. Come on in and do an interview. And when I got there, it was the old group. Coop, you know, Aaron, maybe not you, but like Coop, maybe you remember, you know, Cooper Gardner and Bill Chilly and all these people. All the OG New York guys. You know, and it was funny. They were joking, or at least I think they were joking. But they're like, "Hey, we don't know whether to call cops on you or hire you because you just bothered us for so long." You know, so luckily they gave me the job. You know, and it was a really great day. It's one of those memories that sort of sticks with you. You know, because, you know, I remember when Bill called me. He goes, "Hey, man, you know, Ed, we're going to offer you the job." And I think at the time it was either an associate or an assistant brand manager. And again, you know, a year and a half driving this beer truck around town, you know, with this student loan debt and all this stuff, he goes, we want you to come on to the team. And I remember I was living in an apartment. It was basically lunchtime. So none of the bars that I caught on were really taking beer, kegs of beer through the kitchen. So I remember I was so happy. I was 26 years old. I was so happy. I fell on the ground. You know, it's one of those Shawshank Redemption moments where you're like looking up at the sky and rain's falling down in your face, and you know, it's like everything's slow motion. It was really cool, you know. And but for whatever reason, like there was something about cigars in this industry and what Brad was telling me, what they're able to do and the histories that, I don't know, man, like it was, I fell in love with it, you know, and you hear this all the time for people, you know, where they're in the business, they finally get their opportunity to sort of be in the business and they have other opportunities to move around, but they always come back, you know, because there's something magical about what we do, you know, to support this hobby that people enjoy, that's I don't know, it's a magnet, man. It's a magnet. It's really cool, you know. So, you know, so it took me a long time to really open this door for myself, and believe me, I stuck my foot straight up in the door, I tell you. And luckily the persistence paid off, you know, and you know, I was glad that I knew Brad Hajart, and you know, I was glad that the old guard sort of gave me that opportunity to sort of come in as you know, as a kid, you know, in this industry, you know, and felt comfortable with me, you know, sort of being part of that group. I'm really honored. I'm really privileged to be where I am right now.
That's wonderful. So you mentioned when you came in, what did you start out doing at General?
So, again, I can't remember the title. Let's just say assistant brand manager. But I worked for Bill Chilian, and Bill Chilian had all of the Dominican brands, right? So for the longest time, you know, I helped Bill. I cut my teeth on brands like Macanudo, Cohiba. I worked with Michael Genia, La Gloria Cubana, and I spent a lot of time on Partagas. You know, so anything Dominican, you know, until I transitioned back in 2017 to General Cigar, that's really what I spent my time, you know, working on, was all the Dominican stuff.
Okay. What do you mean when you said you transitioned your back? What did you mean? What do you mean by that?
So, you know, so I let me get the year straight. I think it was late 2014. I had the opportunity to go pop outside of premium handmade cigars for a really big tobacco company in Richmond. You know, I'll let you guess what that is.
Right.
So, but you know, it was one of those things where I worked for John Middleton. So basically, the cigar brand that Altria has, and I won't spend a lot of time talking about Altria, but you know, I was able to sort of launch a natural wrapped, you know, cigar called Casa del Sol, or at least test it out and do some really cool stuff, rebrand some old pipe brands. But I owed it to myself to really say, okay, well, what does a really big corporation look like? Because up until then, all I've really known was small agencies and General Cigar. You know, so I didn't know where that boat would take me, you know, but I owed it to myself to see how other, you know, how a Fortune company, you know, works. And I was fortunate to work with some really good people. It was an exceptional organization. You know, I got to work on a UST product called Skull as well. So I redesigned those cans and did some pretty cool stuff within the constraints and the confines of a really big tobacco company. Lots of conversation with lawyers there.
Right.
So, but again, going back to what I was saying earlier, it's that magnet, you know, and what the simple thing that I'll tell you is that organizations like that, whether it's Altria or it's Procter & Gamble, whenever you're in the brand management programs there and you're a brand manager or work in the marketing department at those big companies, man, it's a really prestigious place to be, I'll tell you. But the difference, you know, and this is where my personality sort of came in, the difference with that style of brand management is that this is where analytical brand managers come into play, right? So those big companies, they have all sorts of data, and they bring you in, and they actually train you like you would not believe to understand the numbers, right? So as you progress in that career as a brand manager, you become what I call an analytical brand manager, right? And it's beautiful to see them sort of pick these people up and put them in other spots of that organization. It doesn't matter what you know the fundamentals of analytical brand management. Whereas what I was really craving was the creative brand management, right? And that's really what I had with General Cigar. That's what people, other of my peers have, you know, in other companies within Premium Cigars. They become a creative brand manager. They're able to sort of, you know, gravitate to the beautiful stories that this industry has and really sort of carry that over to the cigar smokers and cigar lovers in our industry. That, for me, that fit my personality better than trying to be an analytical brand manager, especially coming into that crowd a little bit later in my career, later in life. I wasn't recruited out of college or anything like that. I came 10 years older than a lot of my people that I reported to. But that was the big thing. So I really missed the idea of, you know, being able to sort of tell these wonderful stories that we're able to tell and be a creative brand manager. If I'm going to be a marketing guy, if I'm going to be a brand manager, I want to be a creative brand manager. You know, I want to have the liberty to sort of invent things and create things and craft things and be able to tell stories that are built on truth and built on fact. Because the cigar person that you know we talk with on a day-to-day basis, that's what they crave, you know, like, and that's very important for their journey as they start to understand palates and cigars and brands, as they start to discover, you know, the Coops of the world, the Aarons of the world, the Jonathan Drews of the world, the Skip Martins of the world, as they start to understand like what really drives the brands that they really love, you know, there's some deep rooted stuff, you know, that goes to the DNA of what we are as people, that we get to do on a day-to-day basis within cigars. It's cool.
That's great. So you come back to General, right? You go into that role, and this time, did you come in and at that point, did you start working with those Honduran brands?
Yeah. So the opportunity that I had when I talked to my folks, about coming back was, you know, say, hey, listen, you know, I'm not unhappy, but like, if there is an opportunity to come back and help you guys build brands, you know, then just consider me. I was still really good friends. I didn't burn any bridges. And I remember I was meeting with McKenna and Gus Martinez and, you know, they said, you know, Ed, we actually do, have a couple things. You know, by this time STD had really injected themselves quite hard and Regis was in charge of things. And so, it was a different organization, you know? And so, they said, hey, we do need some people to help with the Honduran and Nicaraguan brands. You know, do you want to do that? And I'm like, yeah, I do. And so, I told my guys at Altria bye. It wasn't emotional. I was excited to sort of come back to the family that I'd grown so close to. Quite honestly, I mean, when I left General Cigar the first time, oh, I was crying. It was like tears, just big tears. I was hugging people. It was nasty. You know, it was like these big, you know, these ugly cries. You know, but when I came back, it was nothing like that. It just felt like a natural progression, a natural thing for me to do. You know, and so they said, come back. You know, we need help with CAO, Hoy de Monterey, and then Punch. Right. So when I came back in 17, early 17. You know, I was 2.5 years away and came back. So in early 17, I came back and it was straight into innovations, you know, with CAO, Punch, and Hoy de Monterey. And I mean, listen, as far as the scale of brands, you know, I don't know if anybody else has sort of given you, you know, a peek under the hood about, you know, the scale of some of their work that they do, but man, CAO and Punch are freaking massive, you know, and then Hoy de Monterey and Excalibur. Oh, you know, so I was busting my hump to try to get back, into the good graces of those brands, you know, stay until 12 o'clock at night, trying to figure things out with the plans and all that stuff. You know, like this, and not that I was trying to inject, you know, Ed Lehman back into the plans, but that's just what you do when you take on different roles. You sort of say, okay, well, I can do this different. So it was pretty intense, but it's what I needed, you know, it's what I needed.
Kind of, and Ed, that's kind of like a whole full circle because you talked about how you started out with CAO and now you have this opportunity to be a brand manager for CAO. I mean, that's a real nice story.
It was great.
Do you still have CAO today?
I don't have CAO. It was, okay. You know, I basically set up, let's see, what year was it? I guess I set up the ideas or some of the ideas for 18. And then we hired a young lady named Jen. And she took over CAO, and now it's with a young man named Doug.
Okay. You know, so, I met Doug last year. Last year at the show, yeah.
Yeah, Doug's a good one. And so he's got a lot of passion for the brand, you know, as well. And he works really well with Ricky Rodriguez. And so, you know, so it was – I miss it because there's so much potential, you know, that CAO offers, you know, from a creative, you know, side.
Right.
So it was one of those things, you know, I remember Ed was like, all right, well, if I bring someone on, like, which brand do you want to give up? And I said, well, you know, as much as I love CAO, I think the true creative potential for me is Punch and Hoyo, right? So maybe sort of pass on CAO, pass the torch of CAO on to somebody else. Because, again, Coop, there was something about Punch and Hoyo Monterey. Like, once I started to really dig into those brands, because I never really had the opportunity to sort of dig into the brands like I did with Partagas and Macanudo and Cohiba. When I started digging in Punch and Hoyo, shit, man, like it was crazy. I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about like where those brands came from. I'm like, I want to tell this story. Like, I want to try to do some cool shit around these brands because these stories are incredible. So that's what I do now is Punch and Hoyo Monterey and Excalibur.
You know, Punch is really, when you look at, like, I'm kind of a inside baseball guy when I look at, like, brands and I'm always into like how he's rated at the end of the year, how they place on Aficionado. Punch has been a very successful brand for General as far as the ratings and top 25 on Aficionado goes. It has a very nice run. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people don't look at that. I think of all the brands, it's probably had the most success in terms of that, you know, those stats.
Well, the last 2 years, you know, the top 25, we had I launched Diablo, and then, you know, they gave a lot of love to just the Classico EMS Punch, you know, with the Sumatra wrapper. I'm not going to say it had anything to do with the brand manager that was working on it, but, I mean, it's a strange coincidence, don't you think?
Man, you know, it really – you know, I remember a couple of years ago, yeah, when it was the Grand Cru? Was it the Grand – which one was it? What? I'm sorry, Aaron, what was it?
I, go ahead.
Was it Grand Pure? Was it, which one was it that got the top 10?
So the top 10, so the Grand Puro.
Grand Puro, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. I said Grand Cru. That, I remember, I know the cigar. A lot of people say, how the heck did that cigar get on there? But I was smoking some of them that year. I'm like, they were smoking damn good. I'm like, if people hadn't gone and smoked it, I was like, you got to go smoke it because – whatever was coming out of the factory, I just said they were smoking really good.
Yeah. You know what, Coop? It's one of those it's quite simply it's a comeback brand. And I'm not saying it's it's a comeback story. It's a comeback brand, and what I mean by that is that it's been around for so long. A lot of people cut their teeth with Hoyo and Punch and Excalibur. Yeah. But you know, our people have become very promiscuous with lots of other really great cigars on the marketplace. And so when you give them the opportunity to come back to Punch, they're like, holy shit, I forgot how good this is. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. And then that story is not unique to Punch. That story is shared with other, you know, other competitors and other manufacturers too.
Yep.
We have, I mean, any legacy company like General Cigar, you know, again, we've been putting out cigars for a very, very long time. You know, we didn't start trends, you know, but we were very close to some of the trends in our category. And so if you talk to somebody and try this with Macanudo sometimes, talk to somebody about Macanudo, and I guarantee you at least half of those people will say, well, I started with Macanudo. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I started with, right? And so, you know, this is sort of the older guard group. You know, the younger men and women that are coming up into the category, like, they're going straight for the high octane stuff. Right. So they don't necessarily share that relationship to some of these older brands, you know, that a lot of other more seasoned smokers do. But it's I love it. You know, like all of the brands essentially that I touch that are, you know, more than 10, 15, 20 years old. I hear that all the time, you know, from consumers and retailers. They're like, dude, like, this was my go-to cigar back in 85. This is my go-to cigar back in 93. You know, like, and the cigars coming out of Central America, you know, in the Hatsa factory, in the Villazon factory, or just, I mean, you can't beat them. You know, like I stand by this, but you know, like I feel like that factory has really created its own profile, like its own Central American profile. You know, and we could talk about the history of those brands, and I can tell you like how they truly are connected to the use of Ecuador and Sumatra. You know, basically the development of the Central American sort of cigar culture and industry, like that's rooted in fact. You can read the interviews. You know, so there's a lot of, for me, and this is why I get so, you know, passionate and emotional about, you know, Punch and Hoyo. It's basically about the Haza factory and the Villazon factory. They've been making some incredible cigars for a very, very long time. We're talking 50 years, and it's just, you can't deny that. Whether or not you still smoke them, that's one thing. But again, coming back to the brand, you say, I forgot how good these were. All the time.
Haza and Villazon are still the two factories you use out of Honduras, right?
So Villazon, we don't really have a Villazon factory anymore. Everything's sort of been consolidated in the Haza factory,
okay,
which is in Danley. You know, so that's where all of majority of the Honduran cigars come out of
Haza factory. Yeah, it seems like Haza's been getting a lot more. It just seems like it's been a lot more in the headlines, more that you guys have been promoting more of that as a factory lately. Not that it's, you know, it's been there a long time, obviously, but the last few years we hear a lot more about the Haza factory. And I was kind of curious about that. So how long has that factory been around?
I don't really know. And I don't know if it was existing at the same time the Villazon factory was, but I don't really know. Let me find out for you, Coop, and I'll get back to you on that.
No problem at all. That was more of a curiosity thing.
Yeah, I'm thinking 70s, you know, okay. I could be wrong. I'll have to reach out to Johnny Diaz, you know, about that, you know, or Augustine just right. to see if both of them lived at the same time, you know. Okay.
No, like I said, it was more of a curiosity thing. I wasn't trying to put you on the spot by any means with that. So, you know, with Punch, right, here's a question, and maybe this is a question I am curious with the answer. The Mr. Punch character, mm-hmm. I'm going to show him here. Love the character. What's the origins of this character? Is there anything you can tell us, like, how did this all come about?
Yeah, so again, the fascination with Mr. Punch, right? So Mr. Punch is almost 400 years old, right? And so the origins of Mr. Punch really, really sort of is traced back to Italy. You know, he was a little puppet that was used in Italy called Punchinelli.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it was sort of adopted, you know, by the United Kingdom at some point in time. You think about Punch. Punch was very important to the United Kingdom. You know, in fact, that's where, you know, the origins in 1840 of the Punch brand came from. You know, it was really an export brand to the United Kingdom. It was they were very familiar with Mr. Punch, so they felt comfortable with this, you know, and at the time everybody, you know, men, women, and child smoked cigars, it seemed. So it was just a comfortable figure, you know, coming from Cuba. And you had this mass migration in you know, in the mid 1800s, you know, by a lot of Germans, you know, by basically all over the world, sort of coming to, you know, Cuba to do business, you know, Upman, of course, you know, all the German bankers, you know, they set up shop. Brazil, you see a lot of this European migration to the Caribbean countries. So in 1840, the Punch brand was started, again, with that figure as a mascot, you know, to make the UK crowd feel comfortable. But if you think about the origins of Mr. Punch in the UK, I mean, it's become sort of synonymous with satire. So the punchline comes from Mr. Punch. Slapstick comes from Mr. Punch. It's all comedy, right? Because Mr. Punch actually used to carry a stick around and hit his wife with it, Judy. So, you know, like we owe, like the comedians of the group, they owe a lot to Mr. Punch, you know, again, with the punchline and slapstick and all this stuff. So, you know, with, you know, that's sort of where it's at, right? So this character, you know, I mean, we're talking hundreds of years old, almost 400 years old of Mr. Punch to some sort of extent, you know, has been around. And throughout history, these little puppet shows that they used to do, you know, to entertain the crowds, In the squares, you know, he had his wife Judy, you know, he had his dog Toby. There's a lot of like little characters and bandits that sort of surrounded Mr. Punch, you know, to make up this really cool little puppet show for people. You know, the UK, I don't think it's still existing, but they used to have like a newspaper, you know, called Punch, you know. And so there's just a lot of cool, iconic stuff. If you just Google it, I mean, it sends you down a weird wormhole of some pretty cool Mr. Punch stuff.
Yeah, it's been, it's like I said, it's a constant that's been in the Punch portfolio for as long as I remember. And it's one of the iconic characters the cigar industry has. I mean, it's, you know, there's not a lot of those, but I mean, Punch, Mr. Punch is Punch. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, go ahead.
It's pretty cool with me, you know, like I don't have brand ambassadors, you know, like Ricky or Sean Williams or Laurel, Justin. You know, so I it's cool. I don't mind it because I get to use Mr. Punch in a way to say things and to be this sort of, you know, this witty fool, you know, to sort of inject some cigar humor. You know, this category, man, like our people love like just off-center humor and comedy, you know. So I'm able to do things with Punch brand that no other brand could do because I have that mascot.
Yeah.
So especially in the last few years, you know, like I've been able to do some really, really cool stuff at the request of Mr. Punch, you know, and it's acceptable, you know. And I'm not saying that I do anything racy or anything like that, but like it just makes sense. Like I have a lot of people engaging with, you know, the character that I've created with Mr. Punch. There's one-on-one communication with this character, you know, and I've never seen anything like it before. That's why I'm so fascinated with cigars and Punch, because I'm able to reach out to a cigar smoker in a way that no other brand can. You know, period. You know, and within our category, within, you know, other competitors, like nobody can really talk the way that Mr. Punch does. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I've seen a little pearls of wisdom or the little jabs, if you want to call it. It's always been kind of a fun part of that. That being said, you know, what I've noticed with the work you've done on Punch and Hoyo is you've had this split between keeping the classic aspects of the brand and then launching some what I call more contemporary aspects. And it seems like that's something you've done a very good job with over the last few years with both brands there. I'll start with Punch. We'll get to Hoyo in a little, but it seemed like with Punch, you went through one thing you did. You went through obviously a big repackaging about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Talk about that balance. Is that something that you were aiming for when you took over the brands, or is it just something that evolved naturally?
Well, it's you know, it was very intentional to do that, you know. And if I was going to you know, be a steward of Punch, you know, for the next however many years, like I had that opportunity to sort of bridge the gap or be on both continents of the heritage of being a 180-year-old brand, one of the oldest brands in the category, and, you know, having this outlet to do some off the wall type stuff, you know. Right. Again, we're talking about cigar trends as well, you know, being able to sort of tie into what's going on within other cigar, you know, within the culture that we're seeing right now. So as far as the refresh is concerned, you know, like one of the things that you know, we do, you know, any marketing guy does, is we sort of take an inventory of the brand. Like, what does it look like? Where did it come from? Where is it going? What do we want it to do? What do we want it to say? What do we want people to sort of feel, you know, when they sort of interact with our brand? And I started to look at, you know, all the different extensions that Punch had. And there was a lot of, they were launched by different people. You know, we're talking, some of them were launched in the late 60s, you know, or carried over from, you know, Cuba. Others were launched in the late 60s, early 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. And so each one of those launches had a different element, you know, that for a lot of the older ones just didn't make sense anymore. And I'll give you an example. I can give you an example on Hoy de Monterey too. But, you know, for example, if you looked at like Punch Deluxe, you know, and Punch Grand Cru, if you looked at the band, the red was different. The band was different. And then you had these old names that were on there, Manuel Lopez, and other names that at one point in time were the owner of the brand, but we're talking about over in Cuba in the 1800s, right? So a family, Manny Lopez, I'm trying to remember some of the other, so there was one called JG, right? So there was all these little things from other families that had owned the brand way back when, right? And for me, it just didn't make sense. Like, nobody knows who Manny Lopez is anymore, And so why should Manuel Lopez, who's been dead for 115 years, like, take up real estate on this brand when I don't know anything about him other than what I can read on Wikipedia, So there was a lot of these things that I'm like, well, that just needs to come off. And again, coming back to the marketing side of it, it's like, man, it might not seem like a lot, but just by taking that name off, I can make the logo a little bit bigger, or I can foil it differently or something like that, right? So I started to take inventory of the brand. I'm like, man, like, there's just some inconsistencies that I would like to change, I sort of unified the look and feel. Anytime you do that, some people like it, some people won't, but like, I felt like it was good to sort of give a brand standard to Punch, that differentiates it from the Cubans, that shows progression. Because if you think about our industry, we're also in an industry where we have products that haven't changed at all for over 100 years, right? So it's the same wrap set, same, look and feel. No other industry, does that. If you look at where Coke was or Budweiser or any of the other beer companies, you see them sort of change their look with the time. So about every generation in a brand, about 10 years, you'll see some sort of change in other CPG companies, and so consumer packaged goods companies. You'll see them adjust their package and their image and their brand standard to the time. Cigars don't do that, It was difficult because I was like, okay, well, the antiquity of what this is, I'm going to lose that, but I think it's important to show that this brand is progressing to a different spot. And so with Classico, with Grand Puro, with Recorojo, there was the traditional elements that I wanted to sort of keep and really sort of hone in on. I wanted to brighten up the colors, and I wanted to sort of establish colors for it. So Classico, we always call the blue box. But now, like, let's really, Classico owns blue. Recorojo owns red, right? So when it's on the shelf and when our cigar smokers go into a shop to look for it, like, there might be a subtle cue of the red or the blue or the gold or the white, whatever it is, where they're like, oh, okay, well, that's a deluxe, or that's Recorojo, or that's Grand Puro. And so I was happy with the refresh. And I think, ultimately, it stands out. It's a bold stance on the shelf when they're all sitting side by side. And then I started to sort of dive into some different packaging, ideas that I thought worked better, like, adopting the CAO style box and applying that to Diablo and Knucklebuster and all that stuff, because, man, it sits well on the shelf. And again, marketing guy, like, it allows me to have different equity billboards, right? So for example, Will, right? So that you just pulled up, that's my marketing equity, and there's my brand equity, right? So and it's all one size box. So it's utilitarian in the sense that when it's on the retailer's shelf, it saves them space, but it also allows me to get messages across, because tell me you haven't been into a store where all the lids are ripped off, right?
Oh,
so
no.
Brand manager hates that, because there's lots of like love in those lids. Well, a box like this, you don't have to rip the lid off because it's half the size, right? And I'm able to tell you what the cigar is about, and I'm able to get a message out there as well. Knucklebuster and Diablo, if you sit them side by side to the other sort of heritage lines, it is a little disjointed, but the standard is still there. If you like the bands, there's some elements that make it the brand standard, but some of these like Knucklebuster and Diablo deserve to be different than the regular lineup.
I think it makes sense too. And I think especially even with the smoke that's delivered with those, a different type of smoke. And obviously Diablo is a bolder cigar from AJ, for sure. So I agree with you on that. I think there's until you said CAO, it just clicked with me. Yeah. These are like the old CAO boxes when you said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, like for me, it's perfect because, you know, it's, you know, not only do I get a cooler message on the box, you know, but I also allow the retailer to put more boxes on the shelf if they need to, because if you look at that box the way it's oriented, you know, and a regular sort of, you know, 10 over 10 or, you know, 12 over 12 or whatever it is, the amount of space, you know, it physically allows them to save space. Right. And if you, everybody on this video has been into a store, man, I'm telling you, we keep launching products, but those stores, they don't grow. Right. So space is a premium. So I have to figure out ways to sort of think about that when I design boxes, you know, to make it appealing for a retailer to carry this brand, because there's 100 other people right behind me, you know, that are offering a product just like mine, you know, and it, you know, who knows if that's the, you know, the final straw. It's like, okay, well, I can get two more boxes on, sell more product if I do this style box versus that. I don't know, but like, I just love that box for me. I'm able to put my art on there, and I'm able to sort of save some space, you know, when we all know it's a premium in the store.
That's a good point. You know, even on the Knuckle Buster, I'm looking at this, you have that 1840 on here, mm-hmm. which I think is, that's, you know, it's modern, but you mentioned that 1840, which is the origins of the brand, one of the oldest brands out there. So yeah, 180 years old this year.
Yeah. And that's why that's one of the brand standards that Punch has, you know, that's the ownable aspect of that brand. So any box that I do will have some sort of element of that, because, you know, again, we're talking about three, like two other brands that sort of have over 180 years of continuous, you know, connection to people, you know, in our category. Only two, you know, now the late 1840s and the late 1850s, you know, like that's when like the renaissance of our industry sort of came about. So you have a lot of brands that sort of own that history, but like, you know, you've got a lot, I think, let's see, Punch and La, let's come back to that. But like, you know, it's very important for me to say 180, because that's a big date. 1840 is a big date.
It is. It definitely is. Along the lines of the Knuckle Buster, a value price cigar, delivers great value for the price point. What was kind of the motivation to get a value price cigar in with Punch? Because Punch in general, I've always found, is a value brand. It's you don't have to break the bank to get a really good premium cigar with that.
Yeah, you know, and you know, I would agree with you, but I would say it's an affordable brand. Like the value, whenever you say value, it sort of puts you in a different category. But mm-hmm. yes, Punch has always been known, especially the Classico, you know, for an affordable, consistent, medium-bodied cigar, period. Like, and I used to, so I did a lot of research on this. I used to think it was a value brand, and people did sort of look at that first. And so I asked a lot of people, and I did a lot of research on ratings and what people were saying about the brand. And to my surprise, they actually didn't say that first. They said, well, this is as consistent as you can get. And it's affordable, right? So I was actually thinking they would say affordable and consistent, but they actually said consistent first, which is a big deal. So yes, it was my motivation to sort of have a Punch cigar, you know, for a price, you know, that is, I call it a stair step brand, right? So I, you know, with this next generation of cigar smoker coming into the category, you know, they're testing their palate, they're testing their limits, right? And so I wanted to have a product that was comfortable for them to buy more than one at a time. You know, I wanted to have a product that was in the Punch line that they can buy multiples of and gift one to a friend, or feel comfortable grabbing a handful and taking them to the golf course, knowing that they're going to give one to Bobby and Johnny and Jenny.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so you can't do that with some brands because they're 10, 12, 15 bucks. You know, like, you know what? I'm going to give you the quorum, dude, because I'm smoking my Padron over here. And so don't ask for it.
Right.
You know, I wanted, and honestly, and I'm sure we'll talk about this. Man, we're going to be here for forever.
No,
I love it. I love it. I'd like to talk about this stuff.
Right? As dictating the timeline, don't worry about it, Coop.
Okay, No way. Everyone usually complains, though.
I love talking about this stuff more than anything. But it really came from the egg roll. When I was fortunate enough to do the egg roll, you know, I wanted to do a cigar that sort of rewarded the consumer, you know, and made everybody happy. You know, they're able to sort of get this cigar for $4. I'm like, come on. You know, I saw that there was a lot of value in that, you know, because we're of a scale that we can do that, you know, and everybody is still happy. Luckily, egg roll, I think everybody really gravitated to that. So I mean, hence, you know, the idea, you know, of the Knuckle Buster. You know, I was like, well, I want to do a really affordable, good blend, you know, that's sort of, I call it the Goldilocks blend, that is approachable for everybody, really. You know, that's just for a good price, you know. Again, going back to the consistent nature of punch, that they can just feel comfortable smoking, that they know that, you know, although they spent $5.50 on it or $6, they know that they're going to have a good experience with it. You know, and so I was working with a young man named Matt Davenport. You know, he was he's a young man in our industry, and for a very short time he was reporting to me, and I said, you know what, here's the idea of this cigar. You know, and I want you to come up with the idea, because he wanted to be a brand manager. So I'm like, here's what I need you to do. I need you to come up with a concept. I need you to write a brief, and I need you to talk to an agency about this. Right. So I already know that the genesis of this cigar will be, you know, this affordable cigar that's going to live in this range. It's going to have this body. You come up with like the idea behind, you know, what it is that's going to pull people off the shelf. You know, and so Matt, you know, came back with a brief, and we sat down a few times. You know, I'm like, cool, man. Like, if this is what you want to do, then I will support that. So the proposition of what I wanted to do with the cigar matched what Matt wanted to do with, you know, Knuckle Buster. And we sent it to the agency, you know, and they were able to sort of create some really good work that we felt comfortable with. And the rest is history. Now, it was launched on March 9th. So really shitty timing with COVID, you know, but it's, I think the people that have looked at it and reviewed it, like, they're saying exactly what I want them to say. Like, it's, you know, like they're hitting on all the points that I wanted this cigar to deliver on, you know, and listen, I might be a little too honest with you guys on the show, but like, do I expect my reign of 93s and top 25s to continue with CA? With Knuckle Buster, probably not. You know, I'm not looking for you to say that this is the best cigar that you've ever smoked in your life. You know, what I am looking for is for you to say, man, you know, for $6, I'm going to buy a box of this, and I'm going to have this cigar on hand at all times. Right. And what it does for the brand, it also sort of brings this exposure back to punch. You know, when they feel like something different, they can move up to Diablo or Grand Pros because they trust Punch as a really genuine cigar maker, you know, a maker of fine cigars that they can always count on. Right. So that's why I call it a stair step brand. Like, I want this cigar and brand to be with you all the time, you know, because of what it does. But I also want you to use this as a springboard into other brands if you haven't smoked Punch before.
That's a fair assessment, yeah. And then the other thing you've kind of done, you kind of touched on this already with Egg Roll, and then recently with Chop Suey, you've kind of gone into these limited releases right now. These more, I'd say that I'd put them more on the fun side, definitely more contemporary. So, how's that been going for you right now?
I think it's great, you know. Talking about the trend of you know, the industry, you know, like, we're seeing a lot of this happen, right? And so, we might be a very big company, but you know, like, we can still do things like this and be nimble when we have to be. I think with the promiscuity of our cigar smoker now, you know, sort of, you know, looking for the new and the shiny. You know, our industry really has created an ADD consumer, and a retailer, you know, like, we've created this cigar smoker that is always expecting something new, you know, and that's what's exciting to him or her. They go into humor or like, man, like, I haven't smoked that before. I've smoked everything else, but I haven't smoked that. You know, what do you got new? What's new? And so the cool thing is the limited editions, you know, allow us to do that. You know, and quite honestly, if there's a huge success with that limited edition, it's just a testing ground for us to maybe launch it into a bigger format, you know. But the limited edition allows us to do something cool, experiment with blends and packaging without the risk of a full-time launch.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense.
So you're asking, you know, how's it going for us, man? I think it's going great. You know, Justin Andrews has done some cool stuff with some of his limited stuff with the Rabbit Hole partnership and the Whiskey Row and the Sherry Cask. That stuff's amazing. You know, and we're also seeing, you know, the collaborations like we did with Eric Espinosa and Warzone. Like, you know, again, you can't ask for a better time to be a cigar smoker because that is the future, right? So I mean, it's the perfect time to really love cigars because, man, you're going to see some cool shit come out in the next few years. I can guarantee that. Not just from us, but from everybody. You know, it's a great time to smoke cigars.
I agree. So kind of turning our attention over to Hoyo de Monterey. And Hoyo de Monterey, I think before you got there, there was a movement to like really reinvent Hoyo de Monterey under the Hoyo, very contemporary, very modern look. The La Amistad, the gold, one fantastic cigar.
That was great.
Oh, I mean, so you've gone through several iterations with AJ, but I noticed last year at the trade show, you kind of started to dial it back, and you went more back to the classic roots of this brand, especially with the packaging. I'm smoking the Epicure selection, which I'll get to. We'll get to our smokes in a minute. Old school. I mean, this is going back old school now. It seems like there's a really nice change you've made with that to kind of bring back some of the old school roots of Hoyo de Monterey.
Yeah, you're right, Coop. I don't think the Hoyo, what we did a few years ago with Hoyo. Let me try to tiptoe around this, right? So it wasn't wrong. You know, it felt right, but it didn't capture what Hoyo de Monterey meant, at least to me. And again, this is going back to, all right, new brand managers coming in, like new thought. Mm-hmm. I'm like, man, Hoyo de Monterey is probably one of the most recognized brands in the world. You know, and there is this heritage aspect of Hoyo de Monterey that I feel like if you try to make it hip and contemporary, like you're gonna lose that, or you're gonna dilute the fact that it is one of the most classic old school brands that are still out there.
Yeah.
You know, so yes, you're right. I went back to sort of the roots of it, right? And I really sort of examined what the Cubans were doing with it. You know, even talking to AJ, you know, like the story, if you read, you know, sort of where we were at with La Amistad, you know, he's like, I grew up in the shadows of Hoyo de Monterey, right? There's something about Hoyo de Monterey, like, I just can't get enough of it, you know, like, and so, of course, I want to partner with Hoyo de Monterey. So with Epicure, so it started with El Torcedor.
Yep, last year at the show.
And so the way that the brand had evolved, you know, in the Caribbean was, you know, like they really emphasized, you know, the crown and Hoyo de Monterey and the reds and the foils of that. And the old Hoyo, even now, you know, and we're in the process of touching this up, but like it just needed to be more in my mind, right? You know, it's one of those brands that's sort of getting lost in the shuffle of the thousand of other brands that are out there right now. And I don't want that to happen, right? So, you know, my job sort of relies on keeping Hoyo de Monterey alive. And so I wanted to test the water. Like if I could sort of, you know, look at Hoyo de Monterey for more of a heritage and a traditional aspect, and put it on something limited called El Torcedor. It was one of my favorite sort of sizes, you know, that we used to make a lot of, but we don't anymore. And so I wanted to sort of bring that to light. And I wanted to see if the retailer and our cigar smoker, you know, would be willing to sort of invest the $10 or the $11 that I was asking for this cigar, you know, and the special sentiment that it carried. I wanted to see if they would say okay, and they did, right? And so that was a validation that was really, really cool for me, you know, and which really opened the door to the Epicure selection, which is probably one of my most maybe cherished is a weird word, but like cherished launches that I've done to date. You know, because I was able to sort of redesign the band in a way that really emphasized Hoy de Monterey, right? And it really tied back to obviously the Cuban Hoyo Epicure, but in a different way that's ownable to us, right? So that distinguishes us, you know, as a Honduran brand versus a Cuban brand, but still pays homage to where we came from, right? So if you look at Epicure selection, I was insisting on all Honduran tobaccos, and that really pays homage to, you know, the legacy of us going into Honduras in the late 50s, early 60s, and crafting this category when nobody else had, right? So it was very important for me to have an all Honduran brand or blend that is within this cigar. And, you know, the design elements that I was able to touch up, you know, like really just brings it home. It's a simple wood box, you know, it's got a beautiful cliche on it. You know, the band, do me a favor, could hold up the band so people can see if you have that.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll put the picture, because I can rip
it. Okay, all right.
Let me put the picture up there. I think it'll be easier, because I wanted to try to keep the band in one place, and that's my fault. That was, but there we go.
You know, so it's just a simply elegant sort of proposition for people to smoke. It's a really great medium full blend, all Honduran tobacco, you know, but there's really no bells and whistles to it, right? So the box is very simple, you know, and again, this pays the homage to Hoyo in Cuba. But the band, you know, like instead of gold bronzing, you know, and in the industry, you know, gold bronzing is a process that used to be the highest of the high quality that you can put on a band. And basically they powder bronzed, you know, the embossing on the band. Well, I felt like foil is a better representation now, you know, since the technology in the printing industry has gotten better. So I really wanted to foil this and emboss this. And I really wanted to take, and this goes back to what I was telling you about, you know, punch. On Hoy de Monterey, it's very prominent that it says Jose Jenner. And Jose Jenner, you know, was one of the owners, the original owner, you know, back in the day, whose name has been carried over on packaging since, you know, the creation of the brand in the late 1850s or 1860s. So for me, I was like, with all due respect to Jose Jenner, like, he just doesn't need to be on my packaging anymore. Like, nobody knows, like, he sold this brand a very, very long time ago.
Right.
You know, we're talking about, you know, like we bought it from the Plasencio, you know, in the mid 60s, you know what I mean? So like he hasn't owned the brand forever. We're talking about 100 years, but he was still on my pack, you know? So I was like, okay, so let's take him off. And that gave me a little bit more space to sort of foil it better and really sort of have this shield that makes sense. The Hoy de Monterey is just really big and bright red and in your face, and the beautiful crown, you know, that is sort of caps this band, is in foil and it's embossed. You know, there's subtle filigree on the collar of it where it says Epicure Selection. Like, you know, it's little things like that really, you know, get me excited about, you know, sort of you know, refreshing packs and because I'm not getting rid of the heritage. I'm enhancing the heritage. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't need Jose Jenner on this to say that it's Hoy de Monterey, right? So if you want to learn the history, then just Google it. You know, like, it's still going to be there. He's not going to die.
Right.
So I felt like it was time to do something, and this will be the catalyst to where we'll take the brand, you know, like moving forward. We're just going to go a little bit more traditional and old school with it.
And the cigar you delivered with it matches this, is what I'm going to say. It's a very traditional cigar, you know, that it kind of matches what is presented here. And I'll kind of get, once we finish up this section, we'll get into what we're smoking for sure, and I can give you some more feedback. But yeah, I liked what you did. I'm the old school packaging guy. On top of that, I kind of like when I see things happen. And like I said, those touches really made the band pop. And especially with the El Torcedor, I remember you showing me that at the trade show last year, as well. So I mean, I kind of like that. What you've done. You haven't exactly ignored the innovation piece on Hoyo, because what you did an interesting project last year, the Dark Sumatra. Mm-hmm. Letting AJ take a shot at blending that at his factory with those same tobacco components with the Dark Sumatra.
Yep. That was interesting, you know, and I think that was the right thing to do, because, you know, Dark Sumatra, you know, all these blends are really great, but nobody smokes them anymore, Coop, you know, and so it's one of those things, like, I had a lot of people at the show saying, oh man, again, going back to those go back brands, like, oh, I remember like Dark Sumatra used to be my jam.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was like, okay, you know, at certain points in time, you know, in as a brand manager, you have to make hard decisions, like, does this brand live or does this die? You know, unfortunately, some brands, you know, are at the mercy of how much money they deliver, you know, and mm-hmm. the complexity it is to sort of keep those around in the factory versus just sort of letting them go. I didn't want to let it go. And so, you know, we made some headway with La Amistad, and AJ was delivering some really great stuff. I said, well, you know, eventually, you know, if I didn't do anything with Dark Sumatra, eventually I would just de-skew it and just sort of let it go and focus my attention on other things. But in this case, you're right. You know, I said, well, why don't we let AJ have it, right? So it's the blend recipe that we had, but, you know, with the tobaccos that he has to fill that recipe. So, you know, maybe I'll say this, it's predicate, you know.
Sure. That's an answer there.
You know, but hey, what if AJ touched this, right? And so, you know, we see this, you know, with food, you know, all the time. You know, although it's the same recipe, you know, the flavor and the experience changes a lot when somebody else cooks it, you know? And so I said, this is a really great blend. I don't want it to go away. I want AJ to have this. And I feel like it fits pretty well in the La Amistad series of cigars, you know, and, you know, like AJ has given us some amazing, you know, blends, you know, and interpretations of these blends with gold and silver and black, you know, and Dark Sumatra and Diablo, like just incredible stuff, you know, like, you know, AJ's been, you know, just amazing to sort of be a partner with. But I still feel like it feels right that Dark Sumatra is with AJ, you know, and it's a full cigar, you know, and sometimes you forget that sometimes an old company like ours, you know, or Altidus or somebody that's been around a long time, we did sort of break a mold at a certain point in time back in the day, you know, by delivering fuller bodied cigars, so we can do that. You know, I know that sometimes we're not necessarily known for that, but like, you know, it is possible, you know, that you can think that, you know, hey, surprise, we do have some full-bodied tobaccos that we've incorporated in cigars before. So, but you know, it just felt like a really nice sort of addition to the La Amistad line, to tell you the truth.
I liked the concept that you did with that. You know, it wasn't just, hey, we're moving this brand to the factory. It was, hey, we're gonna, you know, transfer, like you said, transfer the recipe to AJ, let him use his ingredients there, and you get this product that's, you know, it's a reincarnation of the product in a very different way.
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's, you know, it's getting back out there, you know, it's getting back out there. And, you know, we took silver off, you know, we didn't feel like that was performing like we wanted it to. So now it's just gold, black, and Dark Sumatra. You know, but it just, it's one of those products and those relationships that we have with somebody like AJ that just feels right. You know, and so I'm happy to still be a part of that.
Well, that's great. How about the status of the Excalibur brands right now?
Man, so you want to talk about something interesting, right? So, so Excalibur, you know, came around in the '90s. you know, and it just, it did things to the brand that, that still to this day, you know, are, it's very challenging from a marketing perspective to sort of wrap my head around, because, you know, in essence, you know, I have a Dr. Jekyll and I have a Mr. Hyde, you know? And so when I talk about Hoyt of Monterey, I talk about Hoyt of Monterey and Excalibur, but in reality, you really do need to talk about Excalibur as its own standalone brand.
Right.
You know, and so, so Excalibur for Hoyt of Monterey is very important from a smalls perspective. It really set the standard for small cigars. And the number one, the Excalibur number one is just, it's a monster cigar. And it's a 7.25x54, you know, and with everybody sort of running out of time to smoke big cigars like that, like it's still, it just still cranks it, you know, and it's, I'm so happy to be a part of Excalibur, you know, and to incorporate that with Hoyt of Monterey, you know, and like I said, it's challenging because I really do want to make it its own sort of standalone, but I can't, you know, because it still is entrenched with Hoyt of Monterey. So I'm trying to make, and I started to do this with on the boxes of Excalibur, but I've started to sort of de-emphasize Hoyt of Monterey in a way where I emphasize Excalibur. So it's still Hoyt of Monterey Excalibur, but now instead of Hoyt of Monterey Excalibur Jose Jenner, now it's Hoyt of Monterey Excalibur without the Jose Jenner, right? So just, you know, it's not a refresh that you would see like on Punch, on the Punchline, because I just don't think that could do that, you know, but it's just, it's an amazing brand, you know, and, you know, it goes back to the old school relationships that we had with like Lou Rothman, and JR, you know, like that, that was, you know, a lot of those brands really owe a lot to Lou Rothman back in the day and the partnership that we had with him before he sold, JR to Altadis, you know, and because of that relationship, you know, the old school relationship that we had back in the day, Excalibur is, it's a super brand. It's a super brand. It delivers a lot, you know, to us, not only to the cigar smoker as far as, you know, a really great cigar, but it stays true to the principles of what, you know, of when it was created. You know, and those cigars coming out of Elizan and Hatsa were created in the late, you know, 50s, early 60s to deliver a very, you know, Cuban-esque, you know, sort of fuller bodied experience than the American market was used to, you know, and that's a fact, right? And so still to this day, you know, Excalibur does deliver on that sort of promise of a fuller bodied experience, you know, that you can always count on, you know, coming from Hatsa.
Yep. I agree. I mean, especially that, that Dark Knight, it's always been one of my favorites.
Well, you know, the Dark Knight, the Cameroon, you know, like, don't forget Excalibur has the Cameroon. We used to call it 1066, mm-hmm. You know, and so, I mean, we just have a lot of cool stuff, you know, that I want people to start smoking again, you know, to be honest with you, you know, because it's just classic stuff.
Agree. I agree. It's good stuff to revisit. Aaron, anything else on the brands you want to hit?
No, I think you covered it.
Okay. So, Ed, we're going to get into what we're smoking, but I have one question. It's our Cattle Baron steak question of the evening. And I want to know, you're in Richmond, or you could tell me anywhere, what is your favorite steakhouse to go to?
Well, you know, there's in Richmond, right, so we have the chains. We have a Fleming's. We have a Morton's. We used to have a Shula's. You know, there's a small steakhouse that one of my partners used to take us to. It's one of his favorite restaurants. It's called Buckheads. And Buckheads, you can always get a really great steak at Buckheads, you know, in Richmond. You know, it's just done right. You know, and there's just no other way to say it. You know, Buckheads is really great. Ruth Chris down the road, you know, I've probably gone there more than anything. So, you know, the steakhouse, you know, Ruth Chris always delivers. There used to be a restaurant that I used to go to all the time. It's closed down now, but it's a local place. It's called Comfort. And one of my amigos, Jason Alley, owned that. And it was a bourbon comfort food spot, you know, sort of high-end comfort food, if that makes sense, sort of local stuff. But he'd always do a really good steak as well. You know, so if you come to Richmond, Coop, love to have you. We'll take you to Buckheads. you know, and we'll do a little snake and die. Aaron, you can come too. You know,
sure.
Yeah. You know, Richmond's a cool town. I think people either love it or hate it. There's a charm to Richmond. What I'll just say is, like, it's the capital of Virginia. Obviously, there's a real charm to that city. I used to spend a lot more time there many moons ago. So, yeah, it's an interesting city. I like it, actually. So,
Hoop, you're right. You know, like, there's, you said you either love it or hate it.
There's no in between with it.
The way that I explain it,
yeah,
is that Richmond is the town when you fly into it. Like you either, you know, like Richmond as a town says, like, who are you and why are you here? Right? It's not going to offer itself to you, right? Like a Chicago or New York. Like, it's not going to say, welcome to Richmond. We're beautiful. Come see me. Like, Richmond is very skeptical of people that come here, right? So, but what's beautiful about Richmond is that, you know, there's a grittiness to Richmond.
Yes.
You know, which is funny. But you have to ask people, you know, what to do. And the thing about Richmond folks is that we're very proud of, you know, everything there is around Richmond, you know, and now it usually sort of gravitates around to all the really great restaurants and breweries that we have, you know. So you have to ask somebody, hey, I'm in Richmond, what should I do? I guarantee you that everybody in Richmond will give you a list of 5 or 10 things that you have to do in order to sort of like Richmond before you leave. But if you don't ask, then you're going to leave Richmond. You're like, I don't think I'm going to go there again.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. But definitely, like I said, I've been a fan of Richmond. So, all right, let's get into what we're smoking tonight. And that's sponsored by Tailored Smoke, located in the heart of downtown Charlotte's epicenter and now near the Charlotte Motor Speedway in Concord, North Carolina. Tailored Smoke is your one-stop shop for a tailored smoking experience. So, Aaron, you are smoking something out of the Excalibur line tonight.
Yeah, I am smoking the Hoy de Monterey Excalibur Dark Knight. This is number one, series one? How do you, what's the naming convention for that? But
right, so the Dark Knights, you know, we have if you were to go in a store, you would have Dark Knight number one and Dark Knight number two.
All right. So Dark Knight number one, I bought the cigar on my first visit to Corona Cigar in 2012.
Okay.
So this is very, aged, version of this cigar. Very cedar forward, as you can imagine, being a cigar that's 8 years old, been in a humidor for quite some time. So cedar forward, nice spiciness to it. It's very smooth at this point. It's got a little bit of black pepper still in the background, a little bit of mustiness, creaminess kind of there. Retrohale is quite smooth. Strength, I'd say, is maybe just a hint under medium at this point. So it's kind of, you know, mellowed over time. But yeah, sure. it's still got the flavor to it. So it's nice. I mean, I'm sure it's not as you know, full-bodied as it was when it was newly released, but it's still an enjoyable cigar.
Good. Yeah, and I think what you're smoking now, you could probably expect that with Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think, you know, like those cigars, like that blend is not really designed to really knock you out. Mm-hmm. You know, like you would expect now, you know, something come out of AJ's factory or somebody else. You know, I think, you know, the principles of the Excalibur line, Hoy de the Monterey line coming out of Hudson now is more flavor forward versus strength forward, right? So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that you say that it's a little under medium. Probably started at medium, at least when it came in the market. You know, 8 years ago when it got on the shelf when you bought it. So it doesn't surprise me that it's not like spicy, mm-hmm. you know, but I'm sure that there's a lot of those, you know, again, going back to that Central American profile, there's a lot of this, that Central American profile where it's just meaty enough for you. Right. Yeah. And it's not offending, you know, it has the flavor that you need to sort of, you know, deliver a good smoking experience, to make you not want to put it down, you know, to find something else. Right. So, you know, I appreciate that.
Yep.
I smoked the Hoy de Monterey Epicure Selection, and I smoked the number two size, which is that Robusto. It's just under a 5-inch by 550. And, you know, I don't want to – it was very old school. Mm-hmm. I don't want to use the word Cuban-esque. It was like old school Honduran is what this reminded me of. It had earthy notes. It had natural tobacco notes. It had a toastiness to it. There was some spice that came up, particularly in the second half, not overpowering spice, subtle sweetness along the way. I enjoyed this cigar. Like I said, it really matched what you were bringing back with the packaging, but the cigar delivered in terms of that right now. And it was just a throwback to it. It's definitely Honduran. If you like Honduran tobacco, I think you're going to like this. If maybe you aren't a Honduran fan, this might not be for you, I'll be honest. But I do like Honduran, and I was very impressed with this, Ed. This was a very nice addition into the line here, just packaging and cigar-wise.
Well, that's good to hear. You know, I talked to another old-school guy named Sherwin Seltzer. You know,
and that's an old name. Yeah.
He was very sort of instrumental in the old guard of Villazon back when Frank Ineza and Blumenthal and he smoked it. He goes, Eddie, you know, I got to tell you, he goes, that remind me of the old school Hoyas that we used to make, you know? And so I think you're right. And so that was one of the principles that I wanted to sort of, you know, capture with this cigar, you know. Again, with that all Honduran, you know, blend, lots of Habano in there. I'm a big fan of the Habano sort of strain of tobacco. You know, I felt like, you know, the wrapper color needed to be right. You know, the blend needed to be, you know, right. Again, I needed to use all Honduran tobacco. You know, and the idea was it to have, was that this cigar would have those old school qualities, you know, if you will, you know, because there's just a lot of power bombs that are out there now. And so it mutes, in my mind, it mutes, you know, the tobacco flavors and the mesh and the melding of the blend, you know, when you have, you know, too much Lajero in it. So it's good to hear you say that. You know, there were some other reviews that again were just sort of right on the money on why I wanted to make this cigar, you know, as far as you know, the overall experience with this cigar. So it's really good that you know as a cigar professional would sort of acknowledge that, you know what I mean? So because I want people to feel comfortable coming to this brand and basically seeing the Epicure selection back on the shelf and saying, huh, I haven't smoked one in a while, but like this looks appealing to me, so I'll try it. And I want them to leave with that experience that, you know what, there's some nostalgia smoke in this, you know, that brings me back to a different time than where I'm at now.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that's important, you know, as you guys go through your humidors, you know, to smoke those. Like I'm smoking a brand that I launched in 2009 that was very important to me, the Partagas Benji Master Series, Mahisio.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and this cigar is so delicious right now, you know, but it also sort of brings me back to, you know, working with Benji on this, you know, as a younger man, you know, coming up with this, you know, the idea and the concept, you know, and bringing this forward, you know, it's just the flavor that I'm getting for this, like, is a nostalgic flavor for me, right? It brings me back to that time, you know, when I was younger and in the industry working with Benji. But it's just that perfect combination of the tobaccos that we were able to sort of capture with the Mahisioso, you know, that is just, it's just enjoyable. And so the Epicure selection is no different. Like, I want that just to be, you know, that this conversation cigar where like just the conversation gets better as you smoke the cigar. Yeah. Right? And the cigar, you know, the size is not a 60 ring. It's not a 70 ring, you know, like it's just, you know, it's that old school ring gauge and size, you know, it's not going to stay with you for 2 hours. You're going to burn it through in about an hour. And it's going to be, you know, just a great hour of smoking experience for the Hoyo. Right, so it's really good, Coop, that you would sort of like acknowledge, you know, that. Right, that's exactly what I wanted.
Perfect. I'm glad in that case. No, it's good work. It's good work. Definitely. Like I said, I enjoyed that. The number two, on that, and look forward to smoking more of those. All right, Ed, we'll get into our bourbon today. I got to do a few commercial reads. You okay with that? And then we can.
Of course.
Okay, great. So I want to mention some of our other sponsors. Gary Tobacco. The authentic Corojo leaf is one of the most robust and flavorful leaves out there. During the golden age of cigars in Cuba, the leaf of choice to make some of the world's greatest cigars. Of course, it is one of the most challenging ones to cultivate. It fell out of favor by the 1990s. In the Hamastron Valley in Honduras, Julio R. Arroa took on the challenge of growing Corojo from the original seeds. And in 2000, he successfully reintroduced Corojo back to the market. With over 50 years' experience in the tobacco business, from growing and curing tobacco to cigar production, the JRE Tobacco Farm has been able to continue to deliver products to market with authentic Corojo. Now with JRE Tobacco, Julio and San Justo bring their very own brand to market, each containing the authentic Corojo leaf. Tadascan offers mild to medium profile in both a Connecticut and Habano wrapper. Rancho Luna is a premium medium cigar available in Habano and Maduro. And Aladino is available in a 100% authentic Corojo Puro, San Andreas Maduro, Ecuadorian Connecticut Shade, or Cameroon wrapper representing the Golden Age of cigars from 1947 to 1961. Now available at your local retailer. Be sure to ask for JRE Tobacco, a legacy that's tasted in every drawer. And by Toscano Cigars. As rustic and strong as the people who smoke them, try Toscano's rustic and full-bodied flavors and aromas. Made in Italy with 100% dark fire-cured tobacco from the United States and Italy, it's one of the best-selling cigars in the world. Toscano cigars are the perfect combination of Italian and American craftsmanship, whether in the traditional long format or the short format Toscanello. Toscano cigars are dry cured, handmade, and fire cured for your enjoyment anytime, anywhere. Visit your local premier retailer today and look for Toscano cigars today. And by AJ Fernandez Cigars. AJ Fernandez's new world brand is named in honor of the discovery of tobacco by Christopher Columbus's expedition in 1492. Fernandez collaborated with his father, Ishmael, on the cigar, which is comprised of a wrapper from Nicaragua, a covers binder from the Jalapa Valley, and a filler blend of Ometepe, Condega, and Esteli tobaccos. The core line debuted in 2014, and was followed by the New World Connecticut, New World Puro Especial, and New World Cameroon. All four blends are able to captivate the palate of any cigar smoker. If you're into beginning to discover the fine world of premium handmade cigars, New World Connecticut's for you. If you're into the rich full body blends, Puro Especial's for you. If you're into complex flavors, the New World Cameroon's for you. And if you're into the robust and earthy flavors with notes of espresso, the New World Cameroon is definitely for you. Visit www.ajfcigars.com to learn more. And by M. Bombay Cigar. M. Bombay Cigars represent the most modern cigar culture of Cuba. They select the best of its quality tobacco to use in the aging process. M. Bombay Cigars are enrolled in Costa Rica by some of the world's most experienced cigar rollers, giving it a unique smoking experience. The band portrays the detailed and artistic nature of our small industry. Try M. Bombay, Gaia, M. Cuba, and the M. Esteli lines. M. Bombay Cigars, where the cigar is a way of life. And we're getting into our Alec Bradley Live True segment, sponsored by Alec Bradley Cigars. Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley, Alec Bradley. Visit alecbradley.com to find out more about their cigars. Live True. So in this segment, Ed, we kind of take a step back in the Live True segment from the hardcore cigar talk. We get into maybe some conversations you have in a cigar lounge or maybe virtually now these days or whatever. And I, you know, through the communications we had and through Victoria, I knew you were a bourbon guy. So I wanted to talk a little about your interest in bourbon then. You said you actually have been playing around with your own bourbons, right?
Well, I guess a little bit. You know, it's funny. I read this article about this concept called infinity bottle. You know, and the idea is that, you know, like you buy a few bottles of bourbon, you know, or somebody comes over with a bottle of bourbon, and you have this standalone bottle where you just sort of fill it and mix it with different bourbons, you know, as as the time goes, you know. And so I, for whatever reason, I love that concept. And so I'll show you, like, my wife actually got a bottle, you know, sort of etched for me that says my perpetual blend. You know, and so I like this idea, you know, because it's one of those things where this bourbon that's in the infinity bottle will always change. You know, the experience that you get, I've got 117 proof Clyde Mays in there that I haven't put in the infinity bottle, but eventually I will put a little bit in there. Now the ratio is up to you, of course, you know, but man, I've been having a lot of fun with this infinity bottle. And so, like I said, my palate is not really professional when it comes to bourbon, you know, and I go in there and my challenge is, let me find bourbon that I haven't had before that's under $25 a bottle, you know, that I can mix into my infinity bottle, right? So my favorite so far, Old Forester 100. Mm-hmm. Old Forster is just ridiculous. And so now it's Virginia Gentleman. It's ancient age. There's Old McKenna. Like, a lot of those are my go-tos where I just need to feed the infinity bottle. You know, but the idea is that you can actually pass this on to somebody, and just sort of this concept sort of lives wherever it's at. You know, and it's, for me, it's beautiful. You know, and, you know, since I'm not like an aficionado of bourbon, it doesn't matter if I mix, you know, what I mix in it, you know. But the reality is that, same thing with cigars. Like, if you look at who distills the bourbon, a lot of times these $25 bottles are distilled and use the same mash bill as, you know, the $100 bottles of bourbon, right? So, you know, it's coming, all these bourbons really, like, are coming out of really, you know, commendable houses, you know, with really, you know, old mash bills, you know, that are tried and true. You know, so I don't feel like I'm slighted when I buy a $25 bottle of bourbon, you know, especially if I know it's coming, you know, from, you know, the Sazerac distillery, or, you know, MGP or anything like that, you know, because I know that they will deliver a really good mash bill. You know, so right now my infinity bottle is basically half Virginia Gentleman and half ancient grains. You know, and it's smooth. I don't know what the percentage is. It's probably, I don't know, 90% maybe. You know, and so, man, I hit this thing every night, you know, like it's, you know, like, you know, one or two sips a night, you know, and it's just, I love the concept of it, you know, and so that's sort of where I'm at. Like, and really, I didn't touch bourbon, you know, until maybe a couple of years ago, because like I said, you know, I came from a really solid beer background. You know, I consider myself more of a beer aficionado than anything, you know, like, you know, blind taste test, I can tell you probably the style of beer, you know, with confidence, you know, every time. But the older you get, you know, it's like, okay, well, you know, those four or five beers that you had, you know, that's 1,000 calories, you know, so
yeah.
It's funny the math you start to do when you start to get in your 40s, you know, you're like, well, you know, the calorie math is not really working out in my favor, right? So I can have, you know, like, you know, 3 ounces of bourbon and still be satisfied, you know, with everything. Not chasing a buzz or anything, but just, yeah, you know, more just chasing flavor. You know, so I've been having a really great time, you know, with that, right? So I don't know, with bourbon, I think I'm more of a tequila sort of aficionado more than a bourbon, but like, I don't know if I'll ever get to the point where, you know, I can confidently say that, well, you know, this is 40% corn versus 30%, you know, with bourbon. Yeah. I don't think my palate will ever like reach the critical mass of professional, you know, but it is fun to sort of play with, I tell you.
Are any bourbons on the market? You mentioned the Clyde Mays, obviously. Any of the bourbons that you've kind of gravitated to or kind of looked at and enjoyed?
You know, it goes back to that Old Forster. You know, it's an old brand. You know, it's got a reputable house. The Old Forster 100, you know, again, you can get it for less than $25 in Virginia. I would imagine that's probably the same for where you guys are at. Like, it's solid. Like, it's really, really good. You know, again, going back to, like marketing and packaging, the bottle, like, has a neck where you can pour it well. You know, like, this one's a little stubby.
Yep.
You know, where like the Old Forster and some of the other ones, like, they've got like a legit handle, you know, that you can pour like a decent pour, you know, so that the bottle aesthetic of the Old Forster is really good. And, you know, maybe a couple of years, I started to do this event called Whiskey Fest. No, I'm sorry, not Whiskey Fest, Whiskey X.
Okay.
You know, and it's this festival that's put on from a Brooklyn group, and it's just it's amazing, right? So they really want to capture the Gen X sort of, or this next generation of bourbon drinker. So they create these events, and I'll let you guys know when they're happening. They there's like 5 or 6 or 7. They want to go up to 10, but COVID really put that into a different spot. All across the country, LA is good, New York's good, Chicago's good. You know, they want to sort of, you know, go into Austin and Nashville, right? So they want to go into these sort of, you know, Gen X-y type of you know, of categories, cities. and do these events. And basically it's $100 to sort of get in. It's a 3-hour event. And what they do is they sort of capstone it with a really good notable band at the end, right? So from 6 to 8 or 7 to 9, maybe a couple of hours, they're doing like a tasting with really, really good people. Lots of scotch in there too, as well. But from 9 to 10, they have like a really good band. So I've seen, you know, Dan Arbeck from Black Keys, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Dawes, all these people, right? So they cap these events off with a really, really good band as well. You know, and so going to these events, I got really close with Clyde Mays, which is a brand that's coming out of Alabama.
Right.
So it's got a moonshiner history, you know, and Clyde Mays' grandson, you know, I think his name is LC, is the one that is sort of the brand ambassador now. But, like, really cool dude, you know. But the connection that I made there is just incredible. And so, and no different than the cigar industry with people coming to see different people, maybe not me, but, like, you know, Sean Williams and Laurel, like, the connection that they make to, like, through those people to the brand, like, really drives consumption, you know, in a lot of ways. So I've become quite friendly with Clyde Mays, you know, and so I always carry a bottle of Clyde Mays around as well, you know, that Alabama style whiskey, you know. So for me, again, you know, like, I'm not trying to be you know, branch out to the $50, $60, $70 bottle connoisseur range. The brands that are comfort brands for me are the Clyde Mays and the Old Forester.
I tried the Clyde Mays recently. I was very, very pleased with it, actually. I'm kind of newer to kind of discovering a lot of these spirits over the last year. I've kind of been getting into it. And I'm just, all these nuances with the bourbons is really, you know, that's, you mentioned the Alabama style. It's, like I said, it's been very appealing to me, right, to kind of follow this right now.
Right. You know, I mean, it's weird to say this, but, you know, it's a fun hobby to have, you know, like, anything that you can do, whether it's cigars or beer or wine or bourbon, you know, or even food to that matter, you know, like that challenges your palate, where your mind says, okay, what am I looking for here? You know, like you eat some Indian food, you know, like, are you like, you know, like, am I like, what about this, you know, this masala, you know, or this curry, you know, am I looking for from a taste perspective? You know, and it goes back to, you know, the perfect example is Cameroon wrapper. You know, everybody sort of chases the Cameroon wrapper or the Cuban taste in cigars, you know, and, you know, I remember very distinctly where I was when the taste of Cameroon tobacco was burned into my brain. I was in Boston. We were doing market research, you know, and you know, we were, since I was working on Partagas, you know, Partagas has a lot of Cameroon wrapper. I'm like, okay, what is it about Cameroon wrapper, you know, that you know, that makes people say that it has this different taste or it looks different or whatever? And I remember I was in Boston where I was like, okay, that's what it tastes like, you know. And so it's I'm you know, we, you know, whenever you sort of, you know, approach something, a hobby, in a way, especially a palate hobby, where, you know, like, you're looking for your brain to acknowledge a various flavor, it's always fun, like, when you finally crack that nut, when you're finally in a place where you're like, okay, that's what it's all about, you know. So that's what I'm looking for with bourbon right now. Like, I'm looking for, you know, like the smoking gun with bourbon.
Very good. Are you into any pairings with bourbon and cigars? Is that something you've looked at?
You know, I think the idea of pairing spirits with cigars obviously makes a lot of sense. You know, like, there's a time where, you know, I was very close with Dalmore Scotch, you know, and trying to partner with them in Partagas and Macanudo, you know, and trying to pair that idea. So I can't say that, you know, that's part of my adventure with bourbon, is pairing bourbons with cigars. Right now, that's not what I'm looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, there's a bourbon bar in Richmond where, you know, I'm very close with this guy, you know, and he wants to do, you know, a pairing with bourbons and cigars. And what's funny is, especially if you're on, you know, all the cigar sort of forums, you know, you actually see that the pairing is not necessarily with bourbon, but it's with like root beer and cream soda and all this stuff, right? So I feel like if you're going to pair cigars, like you have to start from, you know, the root of it, right? You have to pair water with cigars. You have to pair iced tea or hot tea with cigars. You have to pair other beverages first to sort of create that baseline, you know, and then you move up to coffees and you know, some of the hotter beverages, you know, and spicier beverages. But, you know, it is funny. Like I'm not there yet, Coop, you know, like, or Aaron, I'm not there where, you know, like, well, you know, the perfect, you know, pairing is 100 proof bourbon, you know, it's a Tennessee whiskey versus Kentucky or a Colorado whiskey versus a Tennessee. I can't get there yet. I can't get there yet. But I love the idea of pairing things because, you know, as human beings, we try to pair everything with everything. You know, so it certainly makes sense if you're a cigar smoker that you would want to pair your hour or hour and a half or 2 hours of smoking a cigar with something, you know. And a lot of times it is with a beer or a bourbon or a scotch or a tequila. I mean, it just makes sense, you know, but I don't think that I can speak intelligently on where that needs to go. You know, I don't know. What about you guys?
I think that flavor is so subjective that it's very tough for somebody else to give you a idea of what a good pairing is.
100%.
You know, I think you might be locked in with somebody on cigars and you guys can have similar palates. That doesn't mean that you're going to have similar palates in regard to spirits or anything else, because it could just be something where, you know, somebody doesn't like that hot bourbon because it just, they can't get past the alcohol and they can't taste any of the you know, the flavor notes to it. So to me, I think pairings are a bit overrated, especially with alcohol. I mean, I think maybe the best alcohol you could probably pair a cigar with, I think, would probably be port, because it's more of a sweetness forward kind of a thing. But, you know, obviously the easiest pairings are coffee, things like that, other sweet drinks. I think those are the things that really kind of match up well with tobacco. But everything else after that, I think, is just, you know, you're just kind of like, you know, throwing the dice to try to figure it out. You just have to go through so many options to kind of find out what matches up for you.
Well, you know, with me doing this, you know, this stuff a long time, my beverage of choice, to be honest with you, like when I'm in the factory and we're like smoking a million different things, you know, is a, not necessarily a hot tea, but like a warm tea, mm-hmm. you know, to be honest with you, you know, it's palate neutral on your tongue, right? It doesn't sort of blast your palates and the areas of your tongue with lots of different things, bitterness or sweetness or sourness. For me, like tea has been a very comfortable beverage for me to sort of incorporate in cigars. Like it just allows me to taste things, you know, a little bit better, you know, and just sort of cools the palate down, you know? So, but, you know, 100%, you know, like, you know, you can pair anything with cigars, you know, like your mind's got to be right though. You know what I mean? And to Aaron, to your point, you know, like, you know, we can certainly differ from, you know, our palates on cigars, you know, and then you add another layer of beverage or food in there. Like, oh man, it goes to another different level, you know? And so it's, you know, it's the simplest thing to think about, but it's the hardest thing to sort of agree upon, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I'm in the same boat as Aaron. I kind of agree with everything he said. As far as pairings go, I don't try to find that. I know there's guys who do the cigar stuff and they're really into their spirits and their cocktails, and that's all good. I don't think that's bad. I don't deliberately try to find a pair. If something happens organically, I'll say, hey, this actually goes well together, but I don't actually try to find that perfect match in my book. So I'm kind of in that same, I think we're all thinking similar on this thing too.
Yeah.
Okay. Ed, Aaron, anything else?
Nope, I think we're good.
So, Ed, I want to thank you very, very much for being a part of the show.
My pleasure.
Yeah, no, we were a great conversation. At least we got to connect virtually this year, not at the trade show.
Right.
And look forward to the next time having you back here. It was a great time, Ed. Do appreciate it.
Yeah, again, my pleasure, guys. You know, and you guys just be safe out there, you know, and hopefully our paths will cross sooner than later.
Absolutely. All right.
Thank you. I'll let you know when, and I'll let you know when I'm in Richmond. So I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. That's Ed Lehman of General Cigar Company on the Primetime Show. Again, we want to thank you very, very much. With that, Aaron and I are going to do one more segment here, but I want to mention some sponsors first. With Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, master blender Steve Saka set out to create personal compromiso, cigars without compromise. This represents an expression of Saka's culturally held values and attests in three simple words everything Saka wants to accomplish. Cigars are more than a passion of Saka, they are a way of life. As for the brands of Dumbarton Tobacco and Trust, Sobra Mesa, Mi Querida, Umbagog, Muestra de Saka, Todos los Dias, and Sin Compromiso at your local tobacconist. By La Aurora Cigars, in the heart of Santiago, Dominican Republic, on the rolling floor at La Aurora Cigar Factory is a section reserved only for the elite, the best of the best. These elite cigar rollers work for over 10 years to simply get the opportunity to make a historic cigar. Those cigars are the La Aurora Preferidos, featuring six different wrappers in a beautifully packaged perfecto shape. La Aurora Preferidos have been the preferred cigar of the Leon family for 115 years. Take part in a legendary tradition that started the Dominican cigar industry. Look to the lion, La Aurora Cigars. We're Dominican defined. And by J.C. Newman Cigar Company, founded in 1895 by Julius Caesar Newman, J.C. Newman Cigar Company is the oldest family-owned premium cigar maker in America. For four generations and 125 years, J.C. Newman has been handcrafting many of the world's finest cigars. J.C. Newman is headquartered in an iconic 109-year-plus-old factory in the Ybor City National Historic Landmark District of Tampa, Florida. At this factory known as El Little Hole, J.C. Newman rolls premium cigars by hand in hand-operated antique machines. The J.C. Newman Pensa factory is the second largest in Nicaragua, and so Brickhouse, Perla de Mar, El Baton, Quorum cigars are hand-rolled. J.C. Newman's Diamond Crown, Maximus, Julius Caesar, and Black Diamond cigars are handmade by Tabacalera A. Fuente in the Dominican Republic. With its longtime partners, the Arturo Fuente family, the Newmans have founded the Cigar Family Charitable Foundation, which supports low-income families in the Dominican Republic with education, healthcare, vocational training, and clean water. Visit jcnewman.com to learn more. And by Casa Cuevas Cigars. The Cuevas family has four generations of experience in cigar making. For many years, they have manufactured cigars for many industry leaders at a Las Lavas factory in the Dominican Republic. The Cuevas family now brings their very own brand to market with Casa Cuevas Cigars. Try the Casa Cuevas Connecticut, the Casa Cuevas Habano, Casa Cuevas Maduro, and La Mandaria, as well as the Cuevas Reserva line. If they don't carry it, be sure to ask your local retailer for Casa Cuevas Cigars. Casa Cuevas Cigars. From our casa to yours. And finally, by Cigar Marketplace. Cigar Marketplace is the first B2B premium cigar and accessories online broker that connects premium suppliers to retailers, simplifying the cigar industry the way it does business. Retailers can now directly order from the suppliers they want without the wait getting the customers the brands they demand. Wholesalers no longer need to depend on going store to store to find the retailer that fits their brand. This allows retailers to enjoy a one-stop shopping experience to all their store needs. With an optional monthly subscription of $39.99, this allows members to benefit from all order-free shipping, 40% off second-day air rates, 2.5% cash back every 6 months, a refer-a-friend program, set discount of 10% naked bundles, and exclusive weekly deals. And non-members can take advantage of Cigar Marketplace's exclusive deals plus free shipping on orders over $750. Visit www.cigarmarketplace.co to learn more. Well, welcome back to the Primetime Show. I have a few topics I wanted to do tonight, Aaron. I wanted to kind of do these, like, because these, a couple of these we've kind of been on the opposite sides of the fence. All right. So I wanted, this one came up a couple of weeks ago. Stogie Press and Boston Jimmy did an article on country of origin cigars, and I think it was a particular, was it Nicaraguan cigars he did?
Yeah.
And it brought up a very interesting debate, I think, that you and I were kind of talking about. What exactly does it mean to be like a Nicaraguan cigar? I have one take on it, and you had a different take on it. So we'll kind of get into it right now. So my feeling was very simple. When it came to a cigar from Nicaragua, the cigar has to be made in Nicaragua. And that was my criteria. And if you're putting a Nicaraguan cigar, I don't care if it has old Nicaraguan tobacco. It is a Nicaraguan cigar if it is coming out of Nicaragua.
Yeah, I don't necessarily feel that's the case. I mean, I think if you looked at like people, if you're born in a certain country, you know, are you that, regardless of your ethnic background or parents or whatever, you know, I guess that's how it's classified, right? So if you are, let's say your parents are both from Russia, right? But you're born in Brazil. You're Brazilian, right?
You're Brazilian, yeah.
By definition. But you're full-blooded Russian, right? So I just don't necessarily think that makes the most sense, because you could have a Nicaraguan cigar that has zero Nicaraguan tobacco in it at that point, right?
Right.
Okay. So
I get that.
For me, I feel as though, you know, you have to have a majority of the tobacco from said country to be that kind of a cigar. So that would be my feeling.
So let's kind of go to like the one of the interesting case studies is over the years has been Davidoff Nicaragua.
Right.
Do you consider that a Nicaraguan cigar?
I don't think so, and I don't have the blend of details in front of me, but I'm assuming there's...
That's 100% Nicaraguan.
100% Nicaraguan? Okay, it's a Nicaraguan cigar then, yes.
Okay. See, I don't think... Because I think it's...
You think it's a Dominican cigar because it comes out of the Dominican Republic?
Yes. Now, but here's... And you brought an interesting angle, what you said, with the... Like, but here's the thing. When they count cigar exports, right?
Yeah.
What's it counted as?
Sure. I mean, it's the source from where it comes from, right?
Right.
But it doesn't take the ingredients into consideration, so.
It doesn't. And so the other thing I look at it is, I guess from my visiting the factories over the years, there's like it's hard to explain, but there's a Dominican way they do things, and then there's a Nicaraguan way, and there's a Honduran way they do
But I mean, that's, you could say things like that, like, again, with going back to people, like, you know, you can... you know, you could take somebody and raise them in a certain part of the country. If they grow up there, like say they grow up in the South, they may have a bit of a Southern accent when they're from, you know, when they originally were from somewhere else. So yeah. I don't think that necessarily plays into how tobacco works. I don't, you know, they're not whispering in a Nicaraguan dialect, a Dominican tobacco, and they're changing the characteristics necessarily that much, right? So
right, right. So here's one of the cigars that Jimmy had on his list of like must try. I think it was called, and I'll put the link in there so people can look at the list. It is, he called it must try Nicaraguan cigars, right? And I think most of the cigars, Aaron, fell into the categories that we mentioned. Okay. Mm-hmm. What, you know, either, okay, it's from Nicaragua. And it's Nicaragua. Maybe your words are Nicaragua forward, Nicaraguan forward blend.
Sure.
But here's one that was interesting to me. It's Diablo Synchro Nicaragua.
Right.
Now this is the blend of Diablo Synchro Nicaragua. It is a Connecticut Ecuador wrapper. It is a Dominican binder, mm-hmm. And it's got Ometepe tobacco, Peruvian tobacco, and several Dominican tobaccos, Piloto, San Vicente, and Olor. Is that a Nicaraguan cigar? It's made in the Dominican Republic.
I'd have to know how much Ometepe is in there compared to the other.
Okay. So
I guess.
Yeah, see, I kind of looked at it. It was Nicaragua just was one component of the filler.
Right.
Compared to, again, we don't know the exact percentages, so I can understand. But to me, it was like, no, right. They kind of put some Nicaraguan in there, and in my opinion, it really wasn't. There was nothing Nicaraguan about that cigar.
If you throw like a half leaf of Nicaraguan tobacco into the filler of a cigar, and you put whatever your brand name is Nicaragua on it, I think that's disingenuous, right?
Yeah,
you're just chasing the consumer with a name kind of a thing. So
yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that. That's where I was kind of going with that. And then there was, you know, again, it seems like I'm picking on Davidoff with all these, right? So Davidoff had the now this was an interesting one. Davidoff had the Escurio, or has the Escurio.
Right.
Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, mm-hmm. Brazilian Cubra binder.
Right.
Dominican fillers, San Vicente Piloto and the Olor Piloto hybrid, mm-hmm. Along with Brazilian Cubra and Matafina.
Right.
Made in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
Is that a Brazilian cigar?
I mean, probably not. I mean, it's got Brazilian characteristics, but
yeah,
probably not a Brazilian cigar.
Right.
So, I mean, I think we've gotten past the point at least for cigars where you have to classify them as where they're from. There's such a amalgamation of different tobaccos that it's really just a blend. It's a blend.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. We're not talking about we're getting, you know, puros out of Nicaragua for everything, or puros out of Honduras, or puros out of Dominican. So, in that sense, it would be very easy. You know, the factory is in this country, and you get all your tobaccos from there. That's what you make. It's 100% from that. So you would know. But I think with the blends, you know, unless it's a dominant blend of tobacco from a certain country, sometimes, you know. I guess if you just want to have to go based on where the factory is to identify it, that's fine. But I think there's just enough difference with the various tobaccos that are out there that they don't need to be put into a box anymore.
Yeah, and look, we talked about Davidoff Nicaragua. I'm not gonna. I'll still stand. It's a Dominican cigar, but I understand. Right. If it's put on a must try Nicaragua list, right?
Sure.
The Avo one, I didn't understand that being on the list. When I looked at the other things on the list, you know, he where they were just Nicaragua. You know, he had a Hoya de Nicaragua on there, a Rockefeller Nicaragua, Romeo mm-hmm. Juliet had a Real Nicaragua. Yep. That one kind of just, I don't know. That one I didn't quite understand either. Mm-hmm. That seemed like the oddball in there. Like I wouldn't have put that on there.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion. But I can see, you know, I can see where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of curious, like, if folks have thoughts on that too. Feel free to put it in the chat room as well. But I think that was, like I said, it was an interesting debate. I think, to say the least, right now. So, all right. Anything else you want to say on that?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. Let's kind of go to the next topic here. PCA. Okay. Let's talk about a couple of things with PCA. Before we kind of get – I want to talk about a couple of things that was on Matt Ty's show the other night.
Okay.
Did you get to see the whole show or no?
I have seen the whole show.
Okay. So, good. We could talk about that. Yep. Just before we get to it, thoughts on today's announcement of the defurloughing of the Scott Pierce and Joshua. Any thoughts on that?
Once again, you know, PCA kind of falls in line with the outcry from the industry of what the fuck are you guys doing and all that kind of stuff. So, it seemed to make sense that they needed some sort of staffing to be able to move forward with it without looking like a completely lame duck to the rest of the industry. So I would say it's not unexpected.
I was glad that Scott got his job back. That was good. Then Josh, right. I'm glad for both those guys. I had this one thought running through my mind, like, well, yesterday was the 15th or 2 days ago. Yeah. The 15th was
yesterday.
Yesterday, right?
Yeah.
It's actually in the East. We just went past midnight. That's why I hesitate. Did the board like get like one day on the job suddenly realize that they're in over their friggin' head?
they got into the office.
I'm serious about this.
There was no coffee made.
Right. They're
like, what the fuck is this? How can it all work like this?
Yeah. I oh my goodness. And I just like one day. And then here's the other thing. Charlie was like, did you see Charlie's comments, Charlie Minato's comments on Twitter? I saw them like before the show, actually.
I don't think so.
He was not happy. He was saying that there were hints of this already happening and they probably should have been announced beforehand. Like,
okay.
And Matt Ty was telling me he was on one of those town hall meetings today. And, you know, Joshua was hosting it. And he thought it was unusual that Joshua and Scott were on there because, they're supposed to be out of work.
Yeah.
So, look, I think there was, and I wonder the other thing, if they got beat up because of all the comments basically being said, is the PCA is not operational right now.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I think I agree with you on all those fronts. It would have been, and I wonder what they're doing about trade show business. I guess you could call Scott or Josh on that, right?
Yeah.
But so I mean, I don't know. So, and there's still no timetable when the rest of these people are coming back.
Right,
They're emphasizing short term. Like, let's see how short term it is. Like, if they come back at the end of the month, I'm like, all right, this is water under the bridge. But yeah, hope all of them come back there. I had a couple points from Matt's show. Matt, if folks didn't see How About That Cigar on Tuesday night, I'll certainly put a link in if folks want to see that. They had a panel show on with Skip Martin, Abe from Smoke Inn, Cigar Surgeon, and Charlie Minato. And there was a lot of PCA talk that went on that show. And there were a lot of, you know, you had points of view from the media, from the retailer and the manufacturer, which I thought was interesting. One thing that was a theme, and we've talked about this theme on the show and other people have talked about this theme, and it was mentioned on there, was, you know, the board of directors as it is today is I think a lot of people would say, some reform may be needed, changes may be needed for how the board of directors is comprised of. Right now, it's all retailers. We've talked about how manufacturers have expressed, you know, they want more say. I'm not saying they want to be on the board of directors,
right?
But I think they want more say on that, right? And I heard this came up during the discussion a couple of times, about media getting on the board of directors for the Premium Cigar Association. And you and I have some very different views on that.
Yeah.
All right. I'll start this one off.
Go for it.
So this is me personally, okay? This is not a statement I'm making for media.
Right.
I want no part of having a seat on a board of directors for the Premium Cigar Association. First reason is I look at it as because maybe of what I do.
Right.
It's conflict of interest. And how does that break down? Is if I write something really good about them, I look like their mouthpiece. Mm-hmm. If I basically write something bad about them, I'm looking at like I'm a traitor to the organization. And then if I'm privy to information that I can't talk about, it kind of ties my hands a bit what I can write.
Right.
On top of that, my other argument is, do you really, my fear is if actually Cigar Aficionado, with all the power they have controlling the marketing of a lot of companies, and they control the marketing and media of a lot of companies, it's like, I have a fear of now giving them a power position on the board of directors.
Sure.
I think it could be catastrophic for a lot of us in the media, and I think it would be bad for the industry. So that's kind of like where I come from. That would be my fear is of me getting involved with that, but I also would fear if Cigar Aficionado ever had that power. I'd be very worried.
Yeah, I mean, in regards to board of directors, I don't know how large, like if they blew up the board of directors as it existed today and say, all right, we're going to restructure with the board of directors.
Yeah.
I don't know how many seats that they're planning to implement for this, and I'm not in any ways saying that media must have a seat at the board. I'm not saying that at all. You know, obviously, if you're gonna want, you know, if they want to put retailers on it, and they want to put some manufacturers on it, you're gonna want to get some different points of view. So obviously, you're not gonna do all retailers in a certain part of the country or all retailers of a certain size, because you need to get different points of view. Same thing on the manufacturer's side. So you're gonna need a little bit of a mix of them there. So you're going to have a certain number of board seats are taken up by that. So without making the board, you know, this huge group, you know, that media may not need a seat at that board, but there, you know, if there's a committee that media gets to be a piece of that they can participate in, I think you need that same mix in regards to media as well. I don't think you can take one person from the media and they speak for all of media, because you're just going to get that kind of point of view from whatever, you know, coverage that they do, whatever size that they are, whatever their, you know, plans are, what, you know, what they're, what, how they want to affect the industry and things like that. So, I think you would need at least more than one, at least two, to be able to have some sort of a mix of perspectives and things like that. So, you know, and media can play a role in things like that. They can help. They can bring another perspective to things. You know, obviously, you know, trying to share information about the industry to consumers is a big help to the industry. So, you know, I think media can play a role in a committee of sort, at least at a minimum.
Yeah, you know, I go back, and I understand some of the points. I go back about 2013, 14, when we did try to get the Media Association. We had it going for a while. It didn't work, right? But when we actually presented it to PCA, I think this was before you came on board with it, and I think the board of directors of the PCA was intrigued by the idea. I don't think they ever embraced it, but I think they were hoping that we would vet the other media people for coming into the trade show. That's another thing that I just don't want to have a role in, where I'm kind of, I don't want to determine if my peers get into the trade show or not. It's something I think that's something I just wouldn't want to touch.
Right.
That being said, I don't, if there's a consultative type of thing, where we advise maybe like how the PCA can better communicate with the media, better work with me, I'm in favor of that piece. Maybe, right. I don't want to be, but when you kind of made this thing, when me, I don't want to be in part of the strategy of the PCA. That's just my opinion. I think right. that's something they need to do, regardless.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they could always ask for, you know, advice, assistance, whatever it is. I'm sure many of us would be open to doing that. So,
yep.
You know, I think, you know, if they choose to restructure or whatever that looks like, I think there'll be lots of ideas thrown around, kind of see what that looks like. You know, I, not being a news first kind of a site, I don't feel like there would be necessarily any kind of conflict of interest, like, you know, reporting on things or holding things back. So, you know, I think just depending on what, you know, kind of what people's roles are, they could determine if that would work out for them or not.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing is, if I'm going to consult with the PCA, I want to be treated as a full member and standing. Media clearly has not been in that role.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen that with some of the communications that have gone out. Media has not been privy to some of those conversations. Hoping some steps are being taken in the right direction with that. We'll get to that in a second. But yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I think some of the stuff that I wrote last year, I don't think I could have done that if I was privy to information. Like, sure. If I had known that CigarCon was going on,
right,
and then I wrote what I wrote, I mean, I'd get killed, but I'd probably be thrown out of the PCA over that. I mean, I almost got thrown out of the PCA as it was, probably over that. But
well, I mean, I think you could still have, I mean, if you were privy to the information and you were in discussions and you had voiced that you think it's such a, you know, that it was a bad idea and that they're making a mistake doing that, unless, you know, there was kind of an agreement going in that, you know, these are things that we're not going to talk publicly while we're in the planning stages and all that stuff, I can understand where you wouldn't do that. But if it's, you know, if you're able to share your opinion on an open topic, I wouldn't think that there's any conflicts there.
Right, right. No, I understand that. I understand that as well. In reality, like this whole, I think it's a moot point. I don't think, unless the PCA blows up, right? Unless the PCA blows up, you ain't going to see a change in the way they're operating.
Yeah.
I mean, the board of directors is going to stay as is. And I think the trade show is going to stay as is right now.
Yeah.
So I don't see any change happening for 2020. I think they're going to try to go at it. It will be interesting, Aaron, to see if what InterTobac does bleeds over to the PCA. I have a few thoughts on that. But if you haven't heard InterTobac, they kind of announced a hybrid show, which I haven't figured out how you could register for the virtual piece yet. I went and looked today. Yeah. I want to register for the virtual piece.
Right.
But I only saw stuff for exhibitors so far, so I didn't see that yet.
Yeah.
But I don't – here's my thing. I don't see PCA being able to do that for a lot of reasons, okay? Mm-hmm. First of all is they have no staff right now, okay? Yeah. This is a unless they're very far along with this concept, right? They're going to have to really – they're going to have to either hire someone or move fast, and I don't see that happen. The second thing is that I think that it wasn't Intertobac that was putting together that hybrid model. It was the venue.
Right.
And the venue runs Intertobac. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big difference that I see there is that venue probably has the strategy for every trade show going on
right.
in Dortmund. I think that I think is the big difference.
Right.
Another thing on Matt's show, and I don't remember who said it, right? Maybe the, is this continually thing that me and you are getting beat up on over that we were upset that CA got the story about the cancellation of the trade show. Like right. that came up again. I don't know how many times we beat that to death. We were not you told Scott Pierce right on the air what the issue was.
Yeah. We were upset that CA got it first.
We were upset that CA got, but the issue was more of
because like, it didn't go to the members first.
It didn't go to the members first, right?
Yes.
Right. It was, you know, and everyone's talent. But there's still this thing that they think we're butthurt because we didn't, we weren't the exclusive. Yeah. And that wasn't the case. This is the case. It did not go to the members.
Yeah.
So I know it came up again, and I'm like, how many times is this going to come up already? You know, like I said, I think if anything, the communications of that press meeting we had July 1st is – that was all you, Aaron, for going after Scott on that. So right. I all right.
Yep.
All right. So those are a couple of our PCA deliberation topics for the evening. Anything else you want to say about them?
No, I think we're good. All right.
Let's kind of talk about something positive. Let's talk about next week's show a bit. I know we normally mention it, but I want to kind of talk a little about the show because this was your brainchild, Aaron. I'm going to give you all the credit. We're doing a big board virtual trade show. Next week. I want to talk about what this is and what this isn't, right? So a couple of years ago, I remember you and I were doing we had a guest lined up. The guest canceled out. This is right before the IPCPR trade show, and we basically did this show where we went through every list of the companies and what they were going to release at the trade show. And it was a huge hit. It was like one of our highest downloaded shows. We did it again last year. But we were introducing the Zoom technology last year, and you came up with this idea of, well, instead of us reading down this this list, which I kind of named the big board for lack of a better word, why don't we bring on people from the industry to talk about their releases?
Right.
We had planned to do this in June, but the trade show got canceled, and the releases were very slow to come by.
Right.
So we're going to do this next week. And I think we already have 20 manufacturers who said yes.
Yep.
Hopefully they all show up. We're working on more. You've been working on a few today. We got some more in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
What this is not going to be is we're not going to have 20 people in a Zoom room.
Yep.
Okay. Every manufacturer is getting an exclusive window. They're going to talk about their products. I'm really not interested in having – this may be the tough part to enforce. I don't want a manufacturer coming in there saying, well, we can't talk about this yet. I'm looking for stuff that doesn't have to be – we're not looking for any exclusive information. We want to talk about what you have planned or what you have just announced or things like that. So you're not going to have to – like once they're done, they're going to be moved out of the room and the next person is going to come in.
Yep.
You're not going to have Juan Cancel asking who your man crush is. Sorry, Juan, this ain't the show for that. I want to really distinguish that we're not trying to do a VHRF with this. It's not going to have, I don't think this has been done to this level before with cigars. I know Hector did it with the football draft.
Yep.
He worked it very similar. So we're going to see how this goes, basically.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it'll be really cool. I would love to, you know, as we talked about, you know, putting on a show that we'd like to watch. I would love to watch a show like this.
Yeah, that's
you
I know, think.
You
yeah.
have, you're talking through the list. You get to company X. You have the owner. You have the brand manager, whatever title it is. They come on. They have, let's say they have two releases that are coming out. They talk through those two releases. You get an, you know, maybe they got some of the product there. They could show you what the box looks like, what the cigar looks like, the band, all that stuff. It's, you know, kind of a quick snapshot, and you get to go through to the next one. I think it'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I like I said, I think this is a great. This was your idea. I was nervous about the idea at first. I ain't gonna lie to you, but because I didn't know who was gonna respond, right?
Yeah.
And then the emails went out. Now, if you didn't get an email, let me know. Okay, please let Aaron and I know. We're not excluding anyone. As long as you got something to talk about.
Yeah, anybody that has a release from June till we're going till
right.
October. Is it right. September or October?
Yeah, then we go into yeah. – and like
so
I said
– you'll be good.
Yeah, and you know, the reason why I'm saying, well, if you don't have something to talk about, we have a lot of people we have to get in, right? Yep. So if you're going to come in and say, well, I got this cigar and it's really exciting, but – we can't talk about it yet, but it's, you know, that's not going to help any. It's not going to really help anyone.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So I'd ask you don't, but I don't know if I'm sure we're going to get some of that. Right.
Or if you'd like to come on the show and announce something and give details, you're more than welcome to do that.
You're more than welcome to do that. Yes. We're not standing in the way with that. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see how to, I mean, a lot of people were really excited about it. I was just, some of the yeah. email responses we got back were like, we're all really positive. I'm excited. We're going to start an hour earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And most people will have about 5 to 10 minutes. Some are going to have
a number of releases that they have.
Yeah. I mean, we're not going to try to say like, look, Drew State's going to be one of the people they've committed already. They got a lot of releases. Then they're going to have more than 5 minutes, guys.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask me, well, how do I prepare for this? I mean, just come in and really just talk, be prepared to just talk about the product there. We can guide you on some stuff, and if you got some stuff you want to announce on the show, like Aaron said, this is an opportunity to do it.
Yep.
So I'm pretty excited about it. That will be primetime episode 148 in next week, July 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Couple of other programming notes. We have a jukebox show coming up on Monday, Women in Music. I actually had to watch Glee this week.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I sacrificed because someone died from Glee and she was female, so I am going to talk about that. I did have to go back and watch Glee. Not go back. It was painful. I'll just say that. No.
Yeah,
no,
I mean, you probably may have to watch it a lot more if you're going to keep going over, like, you know, dead people, because that show seems to be cursed.
I learned that too. Die. I didn't realize that. I'll say there was some talented covers and there was some awful stuff on there. That's,
yeah.
I'll just say. I didn't watch the show. I watched the music. I mean, Dave Burke goes to his Teeny Bopper concert, so
yep,
I did his research on the show. So that's coming up on that. And then Tuesday, baseball show.
Yes.
So we got the crew. The only one I don't know about, yeah, it's Rob.
Yeah, I mean, there's a. The Giants are playing the A's that night, so I would assume he's not going to be available.
Yeah, I assume he's not going to be on that night either. But, yeah, I mean, he's got to work that. But I don't know how he's working. Like, is he working scoreboard this year, I guess, because if no one's there?
Yeah. He's still got to do the stuff, man. They got to track all the stats and all that stuff.
Okay.
So
we may not have Rob for that one, unfortunately. I'll double-check with him. But we'll have Hector, Miguel.
Bear,
you and me.
Yeah.
So we'll have the usual crew there.
Yeah.
And we're going to change the format up a little bit because of the shorter season. So mm-hmm. I think we'll talk more about some of the unique things about this season. We have some picks coming up and over-unders. I have to get the over-unders out to you guys this week.
Yeah. If we did the team reviews, man, I don't know how many of us can go that deep on the rosters for who they got that's going to be playing. So
yeah.
It'd be
yeah,
tough.
but I know that they shipped my the order went out for my Bryce Harper jersey.
Yeah.
So I am gonna put my money where my mouth is. This is the first player jersey I've ever bought in my life. I usually don't buy a player jersey, but he committed to 13 years in Philadelphia, so I got a while. So he better stay there. So we got that coming up next week, 9:15 Eastern time. Yeah. All right. So again, want to thank Ed Lehman for being a part of the show. Thanks to Victoria as well for helping set everything up logistically. And that's going to wrap up Primetime episode 147 into the annals of history for Thursday, July 16th, now Friday, July 17th on the East Coast. We'll see everybody next week.
See you guys.
Take care.